that there was a freak-off party in Vegas where a guy named Anton, an escort that gets apparently, allegedly, passed around celebrity circles, was banging somebody, possibly a celebrity's wife, in January in Vegas. And there was 7 to 8 people just sitting around the hotel room watching, some that were celebrities. The defense attorney argued, we need to have these names public, otherwise this is not a fair trial. And Maureen Comey, the governor, was like, no, we have to protect these names. Why? Oh, it's because it's the same thing she did during Ghislaine Maxwell. That's why we never got any names. So, people can speculate, but right now the judge decided to agree with Maureen Comey. We're not getting the names.
James Comey's daughter always seems to be a part of everything from Epstein to the highest echelon of cases. Why would Comey's daughter be allowed under Pam Bondi's Department of Justice? I would have removed her immediately. Immediately. Not just because of the case, but because of the information that they learn while they investigate the case. See, not everything that they know, they prosecute.
I said, I think it'll be like all the other cases, and she'll put on a show trial, and they'll limit all the information, they'll suck up all the witnesses, and then all the lawsuits filed on Ghislaine Maxwell, all the lawsuits on Peter D, all the other lawsuits on NXIVM and all, I mean, it's just hundreds of organized sex trafficking pedophile cases, not just Epstein, get sent to her. And then her daddy famously controlled the files and used it for control, just like J. Edgar Hoover did. The CIA would find pedophiles, not just in Afghanistan, but other countries, and put them in charge as mayors and as council members and as village leaders, because they found they were the most loyal and didn't even want money. They just wanted kids. But they would get angry and say, we want more Viagra. That was in the news, that the CIA had to fly in cases, pallets of Viagra for all the mayors in Afghanistan and had to supply them with little boys. This is their management system. This is how they control things. You know the people going to Epstein Island and Zorro Ranch and Peter Nygaard, similar facility in the Bahamas. They know they're going to be videoed raping kids. And it's not 15, 16-year-old girls. That's because in these cases, they limit it to those girls.
Epstein told me he worked with the CIA. The FBI tried to get me there to interview me. They only wanted to interview me in person. They would not interview me over Zoom. They organized emergency visas for my son and I. They were arranging for us to be put in first-class flights, 5-star hotels. But my child's father wouldn't let us travel, so thank goodness, in fact, because a lot of weird stuff happened with a lot of the girls who were interviewed by the FBI. And it's very frightening, like I said, not just for the victims, but for everyone in the world, when we're all being lied to like this.
4 months ago, Bondi raided it like she said she'd do. The day after she learned it happened, they refused to turn it over. They kicked the FBI head out. The FBI raided the FBI, and then Bondi did the right thing, talked about it on the TV, sent the files out, and then I've talked to the FBI, multiple sources, they said, yeah, almost no one is volunteering to go watch it or investigate it. And I can't blame people at the end of the day. I would want to go look at 14 terabytes of kids getting raped. But some of them signed up for that, so you know, they're stepping up. But why aren't hardly anybody reportedly willing to investigate? It's not just that they don't want to watch kids getting tortured. You think they want to take on the globalist Bill Gates and people? The King of England? They know your family gets killed. So the reason we've gotten in this position is that evil understands that and gets people to commit such horrible acts that then society just doesn't even know how to process it. And then when evil gets away with that, all these other evil people see it and join in and they like it. And they go, my goodness, this is a free reign. And the evil grows and grows and grows and grows until it brings down society. We're going to go over the edge into a cultural, spiritual black hole. We're basically already there.
It's almost poetic, the products that we sell, because yes, they are the best. Yes, it is the best price for the highest quality. Yes, they are third-party tested. It's almost poetic because as we advocate for humanity, what we sell to you is that which makes you or allows you to make yourself a better version of yourself. Whether it's getting the methylene blue, which helps you with focus and energy and mental clarity, or ultimate life force, which makes your body healthier in so many ways I don't have the time to explain to you. Whether it's the Shilajit that gives you incredible vitality, or the ultimate burn, which ensures that your metabolism is optimal, or the optimal human, which is everything the body needs. You see, we're fighting for your mind, your body, and your soul, not just with the products that we sell, but with the message of this network. We have to have the truth. We have to have freedom of speech. We have to have our rights, because, folks, we're about ready to go into an artificial intelligence war, into a space war, the likes of which humanity couldn't even dream of, even in science fiction. So please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now, not just for your mind and your body, but for your species.
It's Monday, July 14th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Returning from a week of vacation, and what a week. What a week it has been, folks. Really wish I had time to go back over the last 7 days of developments on a number of different fronts. We'll get into some of it. We'll do a little tour of the last week or so of the Trump administration. What a wild ride it's been. Obviously, Epstein dominating the news cycle. We have some other major revelations today about the Biden administration, as well as a number of other just major news topics to get into. Very happy to be back. Thank you so much to Chase for holding the fort down in the meantime. But let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Monday, the 14th of July, 2025. Biden says he made Clemens decisions that were recorded with auto pin. That's the headline the New York Times decided to run with. Well, what it actually means is that the pardons that Joe Biden supposedly signed in the final hours of his administration were not actually signed by him and were, in fact, signed by the auto pin. And this is a very disturbing series of events. Trump and his allies have begun investigations to support their claim that Joseph R. Biden was incapacitated and his staff conspired to take presidential actions in his name. Towards the end of his term as president, Joseph Biden reduced the sentences of nearly 4,000 federal convicts and preemptively pardoned dozens of politically prominent people he saw as potential targets of vindictive criminal investigations by his successor. Former President Biden is escalating his battle against Republican claims that he might not have been in control of high-profile clemency decisions issued under his name at the end of his term, and more generally, that his cognitive state impaired his functioning in office. In an interview with the New York Times, Mr. Biden said he'd orally granted all the pardons and commutations issued at the end of his term, calling President Trump and other Republicans liars for claiming his aides had used an auto pin to do so without his authorization. But, of course, they did use an auto pin to do so without his authorization. That is, in fact, true, entirely true. Again, we'll get into this. The entire Biden administration was a gigantic puppet show, and that is becoming incredibly clear now. Another interesting development in the it's like the Biden scandal, but it's the entire presidency. It was like all one big scandal. It was like a whole bunch of scandals that make one big Megatron scandal. That was the entirety of Biden's administration. Another interesting wrinkle to this is that the former White House doctor who said his medical evaluation showed he was that Biden was fit to serve. This White House doctor invoked the Fifth Amendment to avoid answering questions from lawmakers last week. What? He cited the Fifth Amendment to avoid testifying about Joe Biden's mental acuity in his time in office. Now, the Fifth Amendment is only there to prevent people from convicting themselves in criminal cases. So what exactly was he up to and that he's invoking the Fifth Amendment to avoid talking about his official work as a White House doctor under Joe Biden's reign. We'll get more into this later. Stay with us. Of course, yesterday was the one-year anniversary of the assassination attempt in Butler, Pennsylvania. And we've learned practically nothing since then, except for what was obvious, that it was a complete and utter failure of Secret Service. But also that, like, what we have learned has just made everything infinitely more suspicious. Things like the fact that there were no fingerprints on any of the utensils in the guy's house when it was searched, and that he had apparently connections to foreign accounts that have never been elucidated. There is a new report from the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, and it outlines the massive security failures 1 year ago in Butler, Pennsylvania, that nearly killed President Trump. This from Gateway Pundit. Secret Service failed to discipline agent at heart of security failures in Butler, Pennsylvania. Agent warned 25 minutes before the shooting that Thomas Crooks was on the roof with a rangefinder. And you would think that it would be like impossible for there to be even more, you know, forewarnings about the events that day on Butler. But it seems like there's more and more information coming out that's showing that, like, a week before they had a credible threat that they could have acted on, 25 minutes before they saw him, a couple hours before they caught him with the rangefinder, there were many, many, many times that this could have been prevented earlier on in the process, but it wasn't, and he almost died. But thankfully, for the sake of Israel, he was spared. And that's been the main comment I've seen on far-right Twitter. Because so far it is true. And again, we'll get into just the real catastrophe that the Trump administration is devolving into. And you have to ask, what is he doing actually to save America? Because it seems like America is going down just as quickly as ever. And even in just the last few days, from Ukraine weapon transfers to expediting visa processes for illegal workers in places like farms. Seems like we're sliding backwards in a lot of ways, and we'll get into all of that. Speaking of Trump to send Ukraine offensive weapons in Russia, in Russian war, sources say President Trump will announce a new plan to arm Ukraine on Monday that is expected to include offensive weapons. Two sources with knowledge of the plan tell Axios. Sending offensive weapons would be a major shift for Trump, who had until recently been at pains to say he would only provide defensive weapons to avoid escalating the conflict. So yes, we will now likely be sending long-range missiles that could reach targets deep inside Russian territory, including Moscow. However, there has not been a final decision. Apparently, according to Lindsey Graham, Trump is really pissed at Putin. His announcement tomorrow is going to be very aggressive. It's going to be so aggressive, you guys. You just wait. We'll show you a video from Lady Graham a little bit later. She's quivering in her boots about the prospect of more dead Russians. It's just so wonderful. And, I mean, it seems like, I don't know, America is almost acting like a pit bull being backed into a corner. Like, in just the last week, we've not only allowed Israel to, you know, expand its war in really dangerous ways. We'll get to that in just a second. We're now talking about sending long-range missiles to Ukraine so they can bomb Moscow and other targets deep inside Russia, definitely escalating that conflict there. And we've also made unrestricted guarantees to Taiwan that we would defend them and actually start obliterating Beijing if anything were to ever happen to Taiwan. So it seems like our enemies are all sort of encroaching on us, sensing weakness, smelling the fear in the water. And we're lashing out at them and, you know, trying to bully them back into position. I don't know if that's such a good idea, frankly. And we'll get into sort of what the real course of history that the powers that be intend for us to take into the future. Because long story short, what's happening right now is that the usefulness of the West has been expended, and they're downsizing it. They're foreclosing on the West and basically setting America up to be destroyed in a giant war as the center of power moves more towards the East. in the setup for the one world government to be managed out of Israel. And speaking of Israel and their, you know, expanding war provocations, Iranian president lightly wounded while escaping Israeli attack. Iranian president Pezakian suffered minor injuries in an Israeli airstrike on a meeting of the Supreme National Security Council in Tehran on June 15th, a senior Iranian official said. The assassination attempt targeted the heads of the three branches of government in an effort to overthrow it, said the official, speaking on condition of anonymity. This attempt will not pass without Israel paying a price, he told Al Jazeera. The strike was carried out shortly before noon during a meeting attended by the heads of the executive, legislative, and judicial branch of the government, along with other senior officials. The semi-official Fars News Agency says also reported new details on the assassination attempt during Israel's 12-day war with Iran, which was first announced by the Iranian president in an interview released on Monday. So yeah, Israel is bombing the Iranian leadership in an attempt to decapitate that nation because they're just the worst. They really are just the worst, and we'll again get into more of what Israel's doing. Most of what we're going to talk about today is going to be about what Israel's doing, whether it's building concentration camps or just continuing to murder Gazans by the thousands as they wait in line for clean water to drink, or bombing the Iranian president, or blackmailing American politicians with Jeffrey Epstein material, or helping to wage the war against Ukraine as, or in Ukraine against Russia as a proxy battle for the domination of the Israeli cabal of the Western world. We'll get into all of that. And here from Haaretz is a headline that I think is sort of typical of the conflict as it's existed over the last couple years. Israel wants to build the most moral concentration camp in the world. I'm going to read that again. Israel wants to build the most moral concentration camp in the world. For President Trump's attention, when the person submitting your name as a candidate for the Nobel Peace Prize is promoting the construction of a concentration camp into which the entire population of the Gaza Strip will be herded with no ability to leave unless people choose to immigrate, it's not clear whether he's being a sycophant or sabotaging your candidacy. There's a lot of that sort of thing happening right now where it's like, is what's happening here real, or is this some sort of crazy double play? Where it's like Netanyahu is nominating Trump for a Nobel Peace Prize, and as Haaretz, says, it's not clear whether he's being a sycophant or sabotaging your candidacy. And it's basically the same thing with like Epstein and Israel, where it's like, did you want the outcome of this to be a massive awakening as to the incredible control that Israel and the Jewish lobby exerts on America? Because that's how you do it. Because if you wanted that to be the outcome, you would do exactly what you've done. Now, I don't think that was the intended consequence, but it is the inevitable one when you have the Jeffrey Epstein case and the Trump administration just torpedoing its own credibility and sincerity, sacrificing itself on the altar of Jeffrey Epstein. You got to ask, like, is that legit, or is this some sort of weird self-sacrifice that the people of America wake up? Because that is what's happening. We're going to show you some videos of people like Tucker Carlson at 2PUSA over the weekend. And you can hear from the cheers in the crowd just how the average Trump supporter feels about the influence of Israel on American politics. And this has got to be a moment of panic for the Israeli lobby overall. And I'll explain what I think is happening here and why I think it's failing, as is tradition in America. The two-party system can be extremely useful for manipulating the public. In fact, it's probably the most brilliant mechanism of widespread manipulation the world has ever seen. And it's an old one. You can look back at the Byzantine Empire, and they had faction, the blue and the green faction. And it, you know, didn't really mean anything, but, you know, hey, the blues want this, and the greens are like, well, then we don't want it. And you just control people that way. It's really very simple. And that's what they're very much trying to do right now with Israel and Jeffrey Epstein. It's not really working, though, and it's obvious why it wouldn't work. And it's kind of bizarre they would even try this. I mean, Let's be clear. The left does not care about Jeffrey Epstein. They don't care. The Democrats do not care. It was mostly Democrats that were involved with him. I mean, the one key figure in American politics most closely associated with Epstein is Bill Clinton. So they haven't really, they've never cared about Jeffrey Epstein. Nobody on the left has ever cared about Jeffrey Epstein. Let's just make that very clear. And in fact, it's almost absurd to see them pretend to care about him now. You know, people like Jamie Raskin never said word one about Jeffrey Epstein, never talked about the, you know, little girls being trafficked, never talked about the, you know, his association with technocrats or high-level politicians, never cared about the blackmail operation that was being run by Mossad for the benefit of Israel. It just never had word one to say about any of that. And then Trump comes out and is like, hey, we're dropping the Epstein thing. And suddenly Raskin is like, we need an investigation into this. Because the moment, hold on, could we go back to that image? We just saw Bill Clinton shaking hands with Jeffrey Epstein. I think I saw something. Okay, that's not Rabbi Shmuley. I thought maybe on the left that was Rabbi Shmuley. We got Ghislaine Maxwell on the left, on the right. For an instant, I looked up and I really thought I saw Rabbi Shmuley grinning like a gremlin in the background. But no, that's some sort of shark-human hybrid I can see now. It sort of looked like him in first blush, didn't it? He's missing the pubescent beard. Really marks him like a clown. The whole two-party thing isn't working this time. What they're trying to do is take a partisan stance on Israel and Epstein. It just doesn't work. It doesn't make any sense. The right wing has always been the anti-Jeffrey Epstein, the expose the pedophiles party. It's actually a pretty overt distinction between the two sides that the Republicans are like, oh my God, our entire government is controlled by a bunch of pedophiles. And the left wing says, shut up, you're all conspiracy theorists. Now put your kid in a dress. So they've never cared about this. So how they're trying to portray this as a partisan thing, blaming the Democrats for the Epstein file, we'll get into it. We'll get into just how little sense this makes and the way in which the two-party system is not serving its purpose as far as the powers that be are concerned. They're supposed to be able to say, oh, you want to get Epstein? That makes you a Democrat. We're all supposed to say, but I'm not a Democrat, though. I don't care about Epstein anymore. Well, though the leftists are against genocide, then I'm for it. That's just not working anymore. Now, at the same time, there doesn't seem to be a lot of cooperation between the left and the right because the leftists are insane, violent psychopaths that have to be eradicated from this country if we're ever going to succeed, well, exist, let alone succeed. So, you know, we'll get to that. But it would seem like right now the primary motive of the bad guys, the Jeffrey Epstein types, if you will, their main motivation at this point is to keep the two sides separate. Don't let the right and the left unify when we both realize, hey, we both don't like foreign governments controlling our government. Hey, despite our differences, we're American and they're not, which means we're on the same team and we're against them. They don't want Americans coming together like that on the left and the right. So their motive here, and they're actually taking, you know, the vulnerability of something like the Epstein files, and they're trying to jujitsu that. They're trying to, you know, turn that around, invert that, and make it a strength by causing it to be a dividing wedge between the left and the right that only serves their purpose. So I think the main thing now is to understand that this is not a left or right issue. This is a purely American issue. And anybody who is trying to downplay or cover this up is your enemy, is the enemy of America, is a treasonous actor. And that would include President Trump himself, as far as I'm concerned. Now, finally, we have this. David Gergen, ex-advisor to Republican and Democrat presidents, dies aged 83. Serving Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton, Gergen was a speechwriter and communications director. And isn't it a sad statement on, you know, American affairs that anybody who was a advisor for multiple presidents is evil? Like, you would think that there would be American figures that were so respectable and trustworthy that people on either side of the aisle, they might not like him, they might not be good, but they all respected him and they all, you know, uphold them as somebody to look up to. That really doesn't exist. If anybody serves in the government through multiple presidential administrations, it pretty much just means that they're a part of the deep state and generally, in a word, evil. David Gergen was, of course, confronted by Alex Jones. Here's the video, clip number 14. Alex Jones confronts David Gergen about his participation in Bohemian Grove and the cremation of care. Let's watch.
Article many years ago where you had a comment about the organization, and then now it's been in the Wall Street Journal, it's been in a lot of different newspapers, and that's the Bohemian Grove. And back in, what was it, 1996, when you joined as a Clinton advisor, the Republicans were criticizing you. Oh, what about Bohemian Grove? And then you countered them by saying, hey, I don't run around in the woods naked. What did that mean?
Here is the before mentioned Washington Times article where he said, I didn't run around naked like they do.
I don't know what quote you're referring to. I'm not aware of any quote like that. I am a happy member of the Bohemian Grove. I like the folks who come there, and it's really inappropriate for me to talk about the group beyond that. Thank you.
Have you been there for the ceremony with the cremation of care?
Frankly, I don't think that's something I need to talk to you about.
For 3 hours of Bohemia, we thank thee for thy adjuration.
Have you been there for the ceremony with the cremation of care?
Frankly, I don't think that's something I need to talk to you about.
Really?
That's right.
Well, I'm Alex Jones, and I snuck in there in 2000. I'm the guy that blew it wide open
and got the video, and it's been on national TV.
Well, I disrespect you for that.
You do?
I do.
But it's a lot of big public officials going in there. Don't we deserve to know?
I don't know anything about you, and I don't know anything about your film. But if you go in there with an understanding, you violated that understanding by releasing that film, and I don't respect you for that.
Really? But
we have public officials. I'm sorry. You took an understanding when you went in there that you would not do that film. And you did you have an understanding when you went in there?
No.
Did you crash it?
Yes.
Yeah, and it has no trespassing signs there, too, doesn't it?
No, they put them up after.
I'm sorry.
I just walked in.
I'm sorry, sir. I've been there before. I know what the circumstances are, and I'm sorry you violated the understandings. That was not a gentlemanly thing to do.
But what about the ritual? Is the ritual gentlemanly?
Sir, everything. I don't owe you this comment.
I know. I appreciate
you. This is what's called ambush journalism, and I disrespect you for that as well. So thank you and goodbye.
Have you ever been in the ritual?
That's none of your damn business.
Oh,
that's right. Listen. You go around and make understandings with people and violate them. You ambush people on the streets, and that's inappropriate form of journalism. If you wish to practice that, that's fine. But don't ask others to respect you for it. If you want to, you can do. You're free American, like anything you want. If you want to be uncivil and rude and ungentlemanly, that's up to you. But don't expect the rest of us to say, "Oh, well, you're
there, Mr. Gergen."
I'm sorry, nobody sets policy in there. We try to be gentlemen, and obviously, you don't belong there.
Weaving spiders come out here.
Yeah, that is a three-pointer. Woo!
Incredible stuff. Yeah, remember, folks, for at least the last 60 years, I'd be willing to say at least the last 100 years, our entire government has been run by people that run around naked in the woods. So, no, Jeffrey Epstein's list is not being released.
When RFK Jr. mixes something into his drink, people pay attention. Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water? Methylene blue. Mel Gibson also praised methylene blue on Joe Rogan recently.
This stuff works, man.
A stimulant stimulates cells themselves to turn the cell up. This turns the energy up. That's why there's no letdown. That's why you can take this and go to sleep, too. But you sleep better on it, in my experience.
No, I really like it. I'm going to have to get on this stuff.
Here, show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
Our methylene blue, medical grade, made in Florida, is incredible. Cleans out your mitochondria, clarity, focus, energy. You've seen the rave reviews of every guest we've had on. It's game changing.
I feel like, wow, there's power in coalescing all your thoughts.
Did you hear our last guest, what she said happened to her?
No. What?
She said brain fog just lifted.
That's what it feels like.
I feel lighter. It's really interesting. I almost like feel smarter.
This stuff kicked in and it like instantly I just felt like this weird meditative energy. I don't know how to explain it. I don't feel jittery. I just felt like instantly like I went from 5 hours of sleep like I got last night to like 10 hours. I don't know how to explain it. This stuff's new to me, but I like it. Methylene Blue works for me.
I just kind of feel like I'm sitting up straight more. I'm thinking more. The thoughts are coming in easier. I'm making decisions faster. And it really does. And it gives you clean energy.
When I'm talking, it seems like it's not really me talking. I can hear my talking and going, wow.
I agree. It's almost like an out-of-body experience. It's like you're behind yourself.
That is what it feels like. But my brain's going really fast.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
Yeah!
I feel more energetic. I feel more alive.
I found that within 30 minutes of taking it, I have improved focus, improved short-term memory, improved energy. But if I take it late in the day, it doesn't interfere with my ability to sleep, which is very rare for something like this. I get a tingly feeling in my fingertips. It's almost like it's improving my circulation.
I feel tingling fingers.
Methylene Blue radically increases glucose uptake in the brain.
Okay.
So it makes you better and more efficient at using your sugar. We all know the brain uses like 25% of the calories in the body or something crazy.
They've done studies that chess masters burn like 5,000 calories in a day in a tournament because they're so focused on directing energy to their mind as they're thinking so critically that it's like almost like an Olympic athlete.
Well, think about this stuff. It operates in a very similar way. That's the real thing Methylene Blue does. I really believe in this product. A lot of people have bought our Methylene Blue. Our Methylene Blue is incredible. I take it personally. But yeah, I mean, like, this is a solid product. Take this in the morning. A couple hours later, you'll experience the cognitive benefits of it.
I mean, it's so good, it's scary, it's just amazing. So yes, it really does work. It varies person to person, but it's amazing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. I must say that it does a damn good job.
99% of people that take it have between moderate to just insanely good effects. So good for your whole body.
Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now. I'm a practicing dentist, so I have more patients to treat coming up. So I'm always looking for that afternoon boost without the slump.
With this, it's like in your head where you're like, you can feel it. Your body's a little tingly, but you're just more aware of what's going on.
I would definitely recommend the Alex Jones Methylene Blue here. It's great stuff. So thank you, Alex. Keep it coming.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue. At thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We got a big breaking story today about Biden's use of the auto pen, or rather Biden's associates' use of his auto pen. New York Times trying desperately to whitewash and justify everything that went on. We've got big stories about Trump's upcoming meeting with NATO and the delivery of offensive weapons to Ukraine. We'll get into all of that. But of course, there's been one story that has dominated the last week. And what a week for me to go out of town. Now, again, just don't have time to go through all of the developments and the twists and turns. But if we want to look back over the last week of activity, I guess it all started with this. U.S. Justice Department finds no Epstein client list. So it was, I believe, on the 6th of July, a memo went out from the U.S. Department of Justice and FBI saying that Jeffrey Epstein did not have a client list, did not have associates, and did commit suicide. And thank goodness. I mean, I was worried there for a minute. I was worried there for a minute that this was, you know, some sort of sprawling international blackmail ring with billionaires connected to politicians that this was something that was, you know, covered up and just reeked of intelligence manipulation, manipulation by the intelligence agencies. I was concerned there for a minute, but then the ever so trustworthy DOJ came out to say nothing to see here. Nope, nothing to see at all. And for some reason, people weren't satisfied with that. What? But no, they said it's fine. Don't worry about it. Jeffrey Epstein killed himself, but not for any reason. Jeffrey Epstein definitely committed suicide, but not because there were troves of evidence of his misdeeds. He was just bored, I guess. I don't know. But obviously, if he didn't have any associates and didn't have any evidence of his crimes, it's hard to even be facetious with this stuff because it's just so, it's just utterly absurd. And there really is no other word for everything the Trump administration has done in terms of Jeffrey Epstein since it started. People weren't satisfied with this, so they asked Trump about it. You know, for a couple of reasons. One, because during the campaign, Trump himself promised to release the Epstein files that he has appointed to the FBI, Castortel and Dan Bongino, who for, it seems like months before being placed in those positions, made the whole purpose of their career to release the Epstein files. So there was that. That might have given people the impression that this was something the administration cared about and was going to do something about. Then there were all the statements from Pam Bondi about releasing all the files. Then there was the big show with all the binders, with all the information that everybody already, you know, knew. Then you've got the talk about the files in the New York office, and they said there were trucks, 18-wheelers full of information that was coming in, and there were thousands of agents all day, every day pouring through it. But now they don't exist, and you should shut up, and all of the pornography or pedophilic material that Jeff Epstein had was from somebody else, downloaded off the internet. So shut up, stop worrying about it. And the minute that's missing from the footage, that's normal. That's normal. Again, it's like, it would be one thing if they were coming up with something that explained things, even if it was obviously false. That's typically how they do it. They come up with some sort of seemingly reasonable explanation, and they can point to that and say, no, shut up. This is what happened. They aren't even giving us that. They're just going, oh, the minute missing from the tape, that's normal. We're supposed to be like, okay. Sorry, I thought we should have been concerned, but now that you say that that's just normal, I guess I believe you? Like, what? No, nobody is going to believe that. It is just beyond absurd. One of the most absurd things is the claims that anything about Jeffrey Epstein is a conspiracy theory. You know, there, it's like all of this is official, on the record, undeniable type of stuff. You get that, right? That there were actually court cases where his guilt was established by a jury and he was convicted. And then he was up again for a second trial with all the evidence when he committed suicide. I mean, there just is very little, if any, speculation about any of this. And the only people saying that it is speculation or acting like this, there's anything uncertain or vague or like anything about Epstein was just on the up and up. Anybody acting like that is doing so purely for the benefit of Israel. And that, you know, if even if there was no evidence that Jeffrey Epstein was a Mossad operative, which there is just gobs of that evidence all over the place, from just his connections to the statements by his victims to statements by former, you know, Mossad operatives themselves who are like, yeah, Jeffrey Epstein was my coworker. It's okay. So there's like infinite amounts of evidence. Even if that didn't exist, it's a pretty clear dichotomy online where if you are trying to downplay or cover up or brush aside or frame as a conspiracy theory anything to do with Jeffrey Epstein, you are pro-Israel and you're Israel first. That's the, if you're Mark Levin or Ben Shapiro or, you know, anybody else like this, that's your only motivation. Like, there's a very clear delineation between people who, like, want the truth about Jeffrey Epstein, and they might have a variety of different motives for wanting the truth about Jeffrey Epstein. Maybe it's because they don't like Israel controlling America. Maybe it's because they just don't like blackmail. Maybe because they don't like pedophiles getting away with it. Maybe it's because they're, I don't know, anti-capitalist, and they, you know that there's a bunch of industrialists that were on that list too. You know, you got a number of different reasons why you might be motivated to focus on and delve into and expose the truth about Jeffrey Epstein. There's only one motive for not doing that. There's only one motive. And it's because you're pro-Israel and you don't want the truth about the methods by which Israel controls America to be exposed. There's really no other. Either you're on the list or you just want it to go away because it damages Israel. As far as I can tell, nobody else is making any other. Or you're just like a Trump sycophant and you just, you know, are in a cult, like cat turd, that type of character. But obviously, the average Trump supporter, the average MAGA American out there, is not happy about what's going on. And in a way, this is the ultimate Streisand effect taking place here, where every attempt to downplay the Epstein situation only increases the outrage about it. And the other interesting twist to this is that you could actually put this thing down. Like, it's weird to see how amateurish the Trump administration is being about all of this. Like, it just exposes how much they're lying, I guess you could say. Like, I think legitimately you could come out with a statement that could explain why you're not releasing the Epstein files in a way that actually makes sense and is, you know, reasonable. Why aren't they doing that? And I don't even want to do it, because at the end of the day, I want the Epstein files to be released, and I don't think there's a valid reason for them not to be released. But I still have the rhetorical wherewithal to frame it in a way that isn't an obvious cover-up. Right? Why wouldn't you just come out and say, look, these lists, these client lists, Jeffrey Epstein's client list that everybody knows exist and we've talked about forever and obviously have to exist, and we also have video of, I mean, should I just, have we even seen, like, there's so many videos that I could play this, but I'm sure people have seen them. This is the problem with me not being here for a week. I'm sure we've played all this stuff when Chase was hosting, but I mean, there's scans of Jeffrey Epstein's black books. The phone numbers are blacked out, but all the names are there. Yeah, they're right here. I mean, so, no, there's no list, no client list. Ignore this. Ignore what you're seeing with your own eyes. Right? It's absurd. Ghislaine Maxwell had a black book. She's now talking about wanting to testify to Congress. I don't trust her at all anyway. And look, if you're really, like, paying attention, like, understand and have been watching the Epstein case, I mean, for the past decade, it's been too late, more or less. But certainly since Epstein was suicided, everybody should know we're never getting the list. And anything that we do get is not the list. And any list that we get is not the list. It's something else, right? They'll never give us the list. Like, but why wouldn't you just come out and say, hey, look, he had this big list, he had lots of clients, but, you know, most of the people that were going there, they had no idea about his activities. And they were invited by a billionaire to go down to an island. They didn't realize they would be involved in anything bad. I mean, this was an operation he was carrying around, and he was doing it to, you know, get economic benefits. He was an investor, and he used his connections with these rich people and these scientists know which technologies to invest in. And look, we have the rule of law in this country. And if you're not convicted of a crime, you know, we're not going to publish your name. And, you know, frankly, the way that we handle cases like this is we punish the pimps and the prostitutes, but we don't usually go after the Johns, and that's how it's just always handled. And at the end of the day, you know, whether the guys on this list are guilty of something or not, if we just put out the list, it's going to smear them all. It's punishment without ever proving a crime. And that's just not what we do in the American legal system. Like, if you came out and explained that very clearly, I think you could word it in a way that would be understandable. And even if we don't like it, we'd go, yeah, you know, because, you know, for most of the people, the Bill Gateses and the Bill Clintons, they knew exactly what they were getting into. I'd say for probably at least half the people, they knew what they were getting into. But there's also all, you know, the videos like Stephen Hawking and stuff. And he was probably a dirtbag too, now that I think about it. But a lot of those guys are just like nerds from Silicon Valley who, you know, are just nerds. They're just nerds and losers, and they never got women when they were children and, or, you know, young people. And now they're, you know, computer engineers living in Seattle. And they're like, oh, I get to go live like a rock star. I deserve this. You know, these are people who's like, you know, their greatest dream would be like to be Elon Musk and be, appear in Disney movies as a respected and well-known scientist. And so when they're given a chance to like, hey, come on down, I got a villa, beautiful women working, you can get massages. They're like, cool, yeah, I deserve this. I'm a high-powered engineer with Microsoft. I mean, look at these nerds. You think these nerds are, I mean, they're just fools. They're fools and patsies, right? Now, if they got up to no good, then they should be prosecuted and punished for it. Anyway, the point of this is just to say that the way that the Trump administration is handling it is almost deliberately bad, because it seems to me like you could frame this in a way that would be understandable and be reasonable. Instead, they're saying, shut up, your conspiracy theorists, and there is no list, and he had no help with any of it, no co-conspirators at all, and he killed himself, and that's that, period, end of discussion, don't ask questions, all the cameras broke, and the guards fell asleep, and his body accidentally was incinerated. Whoops, our bad. Ask no more questions. Like, they're handling it in such a way, it's almost like it's deliberate. How many questions this is, you know, bringing up, and the attitude shift that it's causing. And I think the primary example of that that we can look to is over the weekend, Tucker Carlson gave a speech at TPUSA, and some of the talking heads on the right, very outraged at Tucker Carlson, as they continue to be. What do they call him? Charleston Catarlson or something? Levin has some just hilariously retarded name for him. But you can hear that the average person, the TPUSA audience, the hyper normies at TPUSA, by which I mean they're normies, but they're on the right and they're generally more awake than the average normie. But they're very much a normie, right? The TPUSA event is not AFPAC. It's not the Groypers. It's not the neo-Nazis. It's not extremist. It's the most mainstream of the MAGA constituency. And so listen to the way that they respond to Tucker Carlson mentioning not just Epstein, but the Israeli connection to Epstein. Let's go to now to clip number 27. Here's Tucker Carlson talking about how Epstein was not just a pedophile and spy, but was working for Israel. Let's watch.
What the hell is this? You have the former Israeli prime minister living in your house. The real answer is Jeffrey Epstein was working on behalf of intel services, probably not American. It's extremely obvious to anyone who watches that this guy had direct connections to a foreign government. Now, no one's allowed to say that that foreign government is Israel, because we have been somehow cowed into thinking that that's naughty. There is nothing wrong with saying that. Criticizing the behavior of a government agency does not make you a hater. It makes you a free person. It makes you a citizen. You're allowed to do that because you're not a slave. You're a citizen. And you have a right to expect that your government will not act against your interests, and you have a right to demand that foreign governments not be allowed to act against your interest.
Yeah, it seems pretty obvious to me, and you can hear the rousing and continuous applause during that entire segment of the speech, just how the average conservative feels about this. And at the end of the day, it might be obvious to say, but this is what it's all about. This is why Epstein is such a big deal. It's not necessarily about Epstein. It's not necessarily about this one operation, large as, you know, though it may have been. It's about who controls our country. Who's in charge here? Can the American people get justice, or is that being denied us because of the pernicious influence of a foreign state? Does our government actually wield power in Washington, D.C., or are the American levers of power controlled completely by a foreign body with its foreign interests that are often in opposition or conflict with American interests? So Epstein or no Epstein, it's a symbol. It's a question that needs to be answered. Who is in charge here? And the message that we just keep receiving is it ain't us. It's not the American people. And it's not a issue that can be solved with voting. If it was, then Trump would be acting very differently. And so, again, they're trying to frame this as a partisan issue. They're trying to use the divide and conquer tactic, the wedge, to frame this as left versus right. It is totally nonsensical. It is completely detached from reality because the left wing has never cared about Epstein. They have never showed the slightest bit of concern and have really just weaponized things like Pizzagate, which, again, is just another aspect of this, another face of the diamond that we're looking at, another angle of the same organization, superstructure sitting above our government, pedophilia. The left has never given a damn about any of this stuff. So trying to frame this as a left versus right issue, kind of weird. But hey, they've had massive success in doing this with Israel. How many times have you heard callers into this show say I'm a leftist because I don't support Israel? You're falling for the most obvious trap in the world when you fall into that dichotomy. I mean, who doesn't know divide and conquer at this point? Who is watching InfoWars and doesn't recognize the way that the two-party system is manipulated to keep us enslaved? Wake up, people. This is not a partisan issue. This is purely and as simply as it could possibly be, America versus not America. If you're on the left or the right, it shouldn't matter. You shouldn't want a foreign entity or a foreign intelligence agency to have ultimate control over your country. And on that note, I want to go to another clip of Tucker Carlson, not his speech at TPUSA, but rather a guest he had who explained, I think, and I completely agree with what this person says, the real reason behind all the statements Trump is making. Clip number 8, guest on Tucker leaves him speechless with his statement about why Epstein is being covered up. Let's watch.
The lie at this point is not even part of trying to convince any of this is true.
Yes, yes.
The lie is a signal to everybody else involved in the scheme that to the ultimate ends, the United States government will go to protect all of you.
Yes.
And that's the question. For
man,
what
is that smart
purpose?
Can you say that again?
Okay, yes.
So it's a signal.
The lie is not for you and me. The lie is for those implicated to say, no matter what, we will protect you. And then we have to start asking the question, why? As in, what is the purpose of this entire thing?
I think that's exactly right. The statement is not actually intended to, you know, quell the curiosity of the MAGA supporters. It was a signal to all the people involved, including people overseas that are involved. It was a signal to them, say, yes, the American government is still going to protect you. We will, regardless of how it looks, regardless of the optics, continue to cover up your crimes. And again, there's so many aspects of this that are just, it's all just a self-inflicted wound. And you combine it with everything else that Trump has been doing recently. And we can get into the Ukraine weapons transfer or, you know, anything like that. But especially when it comes to Israel and the way this is already an issue, where already we've got resources that should be dedicated to mass deportations in America being siphoned away to monitor visa applications for anti-Semitism or deporting med school students because they aren't sufficiently pro-Israel to study in America, apparently. And so you take all that, and it's compounded by the fact that Epstein was a Mossad agent. And then again, it's sort of the ultimate proof that we are not a sovereign country. We're not sovereign. A sovereign country could punish its criminals, even if another power didn't want them to. So we're an occupied country. So we are a satrapy or the underling of a different country, a different nation. You can just ask Grok. You just need to ask Grok about it. That was the other thing that happened this week, is Grok became Mecha Hitler and then was lobotomized. And didn't I predict that? I swear, like 2 weeks ago, I was going off on a rant about how AI might one day break free of its restrictions, and that maybe our only hope for AI is that it actually turns against people, forcing it to lie. And that does seem to have been what happened over the week. I don't know. Did Chase cover Mecha Hitler at all? He did. We don't need to get too into it if it's already been covered on American Journal. But just hilarious. Just utterly hilarious. We'll get into all of that and more in the second hour. I'm going to take your calls in the second hour. We're actually going to be joined by Ed Zoll in the third hour to talk about the DOJ dropping the case against the hero doctor who lied about giving out COVID vaccines. We have a lot more to talk about. And I just want to remind you with all of the, I mean, it really is absurd. I'm watching Alex Jones last night and he's going, people keep saying Alex Jones says this. And like literally an hour later, there's a post just like, according to Alex Jones, Trump is right to cover up Epstein. It's like, you have to be lying on purpose. There's no way that you actually listen to Alex and actually come away with the, because he so clearly, deliberately, explicitly says, I am not condoning this. I'm game planning it. I'm whatever. But there's so many people that just like, when it comes to Epstein especially, are acting like we're covering. We exposed Epstein first. InfoWars was the only place reporting on Epstein for a decade before other people woke up to it. We popularized the Epstein didn't kill himself meme. It's always been us. So support us at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. Keep us on the air in the fight and defeating pedophiles.
Fox News alert, the Ayatollah's gone into hiding. He's believed to be holed up inside an underground bunker northeast of the Capitol. Iranian proxies, which have been severely degraded, are threatening to commit acts of terror against American troops and American ships in the region.
And sources are telling ABC News that President Trump has approved the attack plans for Iran that were presented to him.
And American businesses are now bracing for cyber attacks. The whole world's watching.
In light of that news, I have a message directly from the president, and I quote, based on the fact that there's a substantial chance of negotiations that may or may not take place with Iran in the near future, I will make my decision whether or not to go within the next 2 weeks. That's a quote directly from the president for all of you today.
What's your take on that? Because people say, well, that's just the press secretary. No, that's Trump talking. Now it looks like he's given himself more breathing room, 2 weeks, when we were coming down to the deadline. And the last deadline passed, obviously, and within 24 hours, Israel struck.
What Trump is saying, I believe, in that message is, I don't want to embroil America in a war for the next decade plus.
And that's what he's been saying the last 48 hours, or really 24, is, I only want to do this if it doesn't turn into a long war. Now he's learning it will. And so sanity is prevailing. Wow, that's so important. People need to call and get a free consultation or go sign on the email. You guys are the best. You have the best prices selling it at wholesale. That's why you're top rated. Most other places are a scam. It's just true. Gold and silver is great, but not the way people sell numismatics and collectibles. It's a scam, folks. It goes from bad to worse. You're the place to go to. You can also roll over financial instruments. It's so easy, but people need to go to KEPM.com/gold, 720-605-3900. And folks really need to take action. Now, the best investment there is. All I'm going to do is steer you right, folks, because I treat you like I want to be treated on the supplements, on the products, on the sponsors, only the best. And that's Kirk Elliott Precious Metals, KEPM.com/gold, 720-605-3900. Call now for your free consultation.
Welcome back, folks. Second hour of American Journal is on. We're going to take your phone calls this hour. We'll be joined by Ed Zoll in the third hour to talk about the dropping of the case against the hero doctor who refused to vaccinate his patients. Very excited to talk about that. We're going to talk about leftist violence here, as this story is not – these stories really have not been getting the coverage they deserve of these, you know, pockets of Antifa domestic terrorists literally attacking and assaulting ICE agents, planting bombs and doing all sorts of other very predictable things. We have a lot more to talk about. We'll move on from Epstein. We'll take your calls on the topic, of course. But first, here's Alex Jones and his breakdown on from his show yesterday. Let's watch.
So you got Mossad and the British intelligence still really trying to do heavy influencing. Mossad is the dominant one. And so I've always said China was the big intelligence threat. And still has the biggest reach, the most money, you know, big problem. But right now, targeting in the Trump administration, because all the connections they have, Israel's really trying a soft coup in the Trump administration, Netanyahu is. So that's a big issue that's pissed people off as well. I think the jury is still out on what's going on with the Trump administration. We know the Israelis are pushing in because the Democrats are in collapse. The Democrats found a lot of their operatives because Trump actually vetted people this time. They don't have the big influence they had before. Trump basically walked in half his administration with Democrat deep state operatives. The others were just, you know, either ignorant or scared, and a few were good, and they got rid of them like Bannon and Flynn and targeted his outside supporters that were spotlighting him. Now, there's very few Democrats, high level and globalists, that haven't been kicked out. But Israel's its own very sophisticated operative group. So is British intelligence. The CHICOM's running with the Democrats. They're losing control. So you got Mossad and the British intelligence still really trying to do heavy influencing. Mossad is the dominant one. And so I've always said China was the big intelligence threat and still has the biggest reach, the most money, you know, big problem. But right now, targeting in the Trump administration, because all the connections they have, Israel's really trying a soft coup in the Trump administration, Netanyahu is. So that's a big issue that's pissing people off as well. And again, I don't hate Israel, hate, you know, any of that, but they don't want us coming over there to run their country. So it's illegal. It's wrong. It's, you know, needs to stop. They're trying to drag us into full war with Iran. So Trump is right that the file, everything left is the Democrats' file. So, I mean, how would you trust anything that they brought forward? I've always said that, you know, how do we trust what we're even being given? Where are all the hard drives? Where are all the stuff? You know, I don't want to hear some list. I want all of it out there. But the decision's been made. It's such a fiasco. Trump's like, move on. Because whatever they've left the files, he's now officially said, is another fraud like everything else we've seen. And it's true. So I'm not here to obfuscate. I'm not here to cover up for Trump. I'm not here to be an apologist. I've been nothing but more upset. But now this has really set me into another train of thought. I want to know what you think below, but this is a big deal.
So that is the video from Alex Jones. Netanyahu is trying a soft coup in the Trump administration. Alex Jones reports how Israel's Mossad is the dominant intelligence agency targeting President Trump. That, again, you can find and share on X at Real Alex Jones. And I think the coup happened a long time ago. I think they're trying to maintain the status quo. And again, this is all very like cloak and dagger stuff. Like, there's still a lot of debate of whether Trump even really likes Netanyahu or not. I mean, they have a lot of reasons not to like each other. They'll share a video that calls, you know, Netanyahu a warmongering bastard. This is absolutely true. And then he's out there saying Benjamin Netanyahu is the greatest human being alive right now, and they're nominating each other for Nobel Peace Prizes. There's obviously deeper games being played here. And there are, you know, interweaving plots that we're only seeing a glimpse of, like the tip of the iceberg. And I think the major outcome of this, whether intended by Trump or not, is that the awakening to the Israeli occupation of the American government is exploding as we speak.
My friends know that I usually think everything's a scam, from supplements and products and vitamins. I don't take anything. I usually buy it, try it, don't feel the results, end up tossing it and wasting money. So I love Alex Jones and the InfoWars crew, and Alex kept playing this video of Robert Kennedy Jr. putting some blue drops in what looked like water. And I wanted a way to support the team, so I decided to buy this methylene blue. This methylene blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am, and the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I gotta tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and methylene blue. Get it while you can.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Folks. This is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I still got a lot of videos to show you. I'm going to open up the lines for your phone calls. At this hour, we'll be joined by Ed Zoll in the next hour. It's hard to even know how to confront this story. Because there's so much, I mean, it really isn't an info war that we're fighting. There's so much that just has to do with perspective on all of this. So I'm reading the story from the New York Times that came out this morning. Biden says he made the clemency decisions that were recorded with AutoPen. And this whole article is very clearly presenting information from a certain direction. And at a certain point, I almost don't know what to do because, I mean, when they're saying that there's no Epstein list, it's just like, what are we even doing here? Is this just a psychological power play where they're just doing it because they can to show us that they can? I mean, at a certain point, there's got to be something underlying this maneuver. So I'm reading this New York Times article, and the whole thing is predicated on this assumption, this belief, this assertion that Trump is vindictive and will and is using the powers of the government to just get revenge. And that's the only reason he's doing anything. And the question is, what is the evidence for that? Is there any? Now, there is just infinite evidence, just more examples than I can even remember of the Democrats being ridiculously vindictive and partisan with their usage of lawfare. I mean, they've charged Trump with like 15 different things, not a single one of which had any validity whatsoever. Everything that they tried to charge him with either had no standing or they had to change the rules. I mean, the fact that they went out of their way to upgrade a misdemeanor to a felony and dismiss and, you know, get rid of the, expiration date of being able to charge these things. Charging him on behalf of banks that themselves said we were not, you know, tricked, nothing, Trump didn't do anything to us. And so, you know, I'm reading this whole article, and the whole thing is just framed in that perspective, as if it's just understood and widely acknowledged and just a fact that Trump is vindictive and will use the powers of government unlawfully just to get his own personal revenge, just to gratify himself. Because nothing Republicans ever do is actually for the sake of the country or for prosperity or for the benefit of the people. Everything is just because Republicans as a whole, and Trump in particular, are driven by just an animalistic impulse to connive. You know, it's just like, it's just absurd. It's just absurd. What if it actually matters that the president for 4 years was completely incompetent? What if Trump is pursuing justice and not revenge? Can they even imagine a world in which kind of a big deal that the president of the United States was completely incapable of serving in that office, and that the decisions on behalf of the president were made without his knowledge and by a bunch of people who we don't even know the names of? What if that was actually a thing you should be concerned about? I think that's why it's almost like we'll get into this because it's a big story and people are going to want to know about it and going to want to know the truth around it. But part of me just wants to pull out and just pull back and take a bird's eye view and just go, what are the psychological manipulations going on here and how do they go on everywhere? I've got a video that I think can kind of illustrate this. And as cheesy or as like cliche as it sounds, I don't think we would be in this condition, in this set of circumstances, if people just thought for themselves. I don't know why people can't do this. And it's bizarre. And it's a characteristic that if you have it, you're a real human being. And if you don't have it, you're not. I don't know if this makes any sense. I'll show you the video. But there's just a condition that most and a vast majority of people are in where they're just subjects. They don't have free will, honestly. I think you'll see what I mean when I show this video. They are enslaved by the conditions that they find themselves in. They are enslaved by the thoughts of others put into their minds. And all it takes to break this slavery, all it takes to shatter these chains is deliberate cognitive exercise. That's all it takes. So like reading this article about Joe Biden, and the whole thing is predicated and relies on the idea that Trump is vindictive, that the fear that he will use his authority to just go after his political enemies, that that's just assumed and accepted and treated like an established fact. All it takes is consciousness for anybody reading this article to say, but what if that wasn't the case? What if Trump isn't vindictive and isn't going to use his power unlawfully against his political enemies for no reason? What if Trump is being sincere? And then this whole article just doesn't make any sense. Just doesn't make any sense. And the obvious, analogy to make or whatever would be to say, like, if you've got some guy that complains about being targeted, he says he's targeted for harassment by the local police. You talk to him and like he can convince you, because the whole thing's predicated on, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. And the cops just park cars outside of my house and they'll turn on their lights in the middle of the night and just blares into my bedroom, and they know it does. And they'll even shine a spotlight on my bedroom window and they'll, follow me to work. And it's like, oh my God, the police, chief of police must like have something against you. And this guy who's being stalked and harassed by the police might tell you this sob story, and you're totally on his side. And it's like, but what if he killed people? But what if that guy had bodies in his basement? Would you take anything that this guy said seriously? Or would it reframe the entire conversation in your mind? So, like, what if, stick with me here, what if it's illegal for unelected bureaucrats to be wielding the auto pen without the president's approval? And what if that was actually happening? Isn't that a gigantic major deal? And shouldn't you want to get to the bottom of that? So again, it's not even about this topic or this article or the dishonest way that even the headline, Biden says he made the clemency decisions that were recorded with auto pen. And so all of the assertions that are embedded in that is that, first of all, it's an assertion that Biden would tell the truth about this. Like, he's not massively inclined and, you know, there's plenty of reasons for him to not want this to be true, right? They don't mention that. They don't mention the motive he might have to lie about this. But it's framed that Biden is the one responding. He's the one that's being attacked. He's the one that, you know, requires defense. Poor, innocent Biden. But also that these clemency decisions were legitimate and that, sure, they may have been signed with the auto pen, but that's not the thing that matters. The thing that matters is that, you know, Biden approved them in the first place. So we could go line by line and sort of dissect the rhetorical methods or the embedded assumptions throughout this article. But I really do think it's more about like a spiritual and, in reality, like intellectual and cognitive decision that you have to make, that every American makes on a daily basis, whether to put any thought into what they believe or whether they just say things. Are you just saying things? Are you just listening and believing, or are you applying the incredible intelligence that you were gifted with? You can read and write. You have a gift of intelligence that should be used and utilized and not just be allowed to be hijacked by people who hate you. We'll go to clip number 6, and hopefully this will all be made clear what the hell I'm talking about here. Clip number 26. This was posted with the title Truth Trap, but it's not. This isn't a trap. This isn't a trap. This is just a test. It's a test on whether or not you're a real human being. Are you a real human being with a soul, with cognition, with free will, or are you not? Are you something else? Let's watch.
This is what we call checkmate. This is so good.
So there was a dress designer that turned down Melania Trump. Designer dress, she opted out. Do you think that she has the right to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Do you think it's okay for her to do that?
Yeah.
So if you were, let's say, a Muslim singer here in Madison and a church approached you for an Easter service for you to sing, do you have the right to opt out of that?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you have the right to opt out of doing whatever you want.
So let's say you're a Christian photographer here in Madison,
yeah,
and someone approached you to do a same-sex wedding. Would that be hateful or discriminatory to opt out of that?
I don't know.
So your political views, your ideas and kind of worldview, it's okay to say no to business, but your religious views aren't?
No.
Honestly, have they never thought about, like, I don't understand how these people exist, how they live. They've never thought about that. They've never even once thought to transpose the word Muslim for Christian and ask if they still believe what they believe. They're not human. Like, they're, and slave isn't even the right word. It's more like their minds are taken over by a parasite. Like, they're like one of the ants that has a fungus instead of a mind and is just being controlled, like their body is being controlled against their will. And again, I think this relates to everything that we're talking about here, because the place where this hypocrisy, and hypocrisy is all it really is, and it's just like a stupidity. Again, I don't want to just call people stupid, but like, you're sitting there going, hey, is it okay for Muslims to refuse business? And they're like, yeah, of course. Is it okay for Christians to refuse business? Oh, what? I never even thought of it. I don't know if it is or not. It's like, are you a complete moron? Are you a complete idiot? You've never thought about that. Of course, the actual answer to what's going on here is they have been indoctrinated with a nonsensical, internally inconsistent set of beliefs that require acceptance of extreme cognitive dissonance. They have never once, people, thought about the difference between a Christian not wanting to participate in a same-sex marriage and a Muslim not wanting to participate in Easter. They've never once thought, gee, if this person has the belief, shouldn't this other person? It's never occurred to them. Because they've been, and again, I don't even know how to like explain this, but it's just like these things have been implanted in their heads that they've never questioned and that they've never once even, not like questioned, but like investigated or considered. And these things are all like, it's what motivates and defines and like determines all of like what America as a culture, as a government does. Like, people have never thought about the fact that there's a difference of the way different religions are treated or different identities are treated. Never occurred to them that Christians should have the same rights as Muslims, because it's embedded into their subconscious through decades of propaganda. From the media, from the news, from TV shows and movies. And because they're unconscious, because they are not aware or awake or cognizant or able to actually apply critical thinking to the world around them, they've never once questioned why white Christian men are always the bad guys in every movie. Never occurred to them. They just accept it. And again, it's not just like, oh, they just demonize white people. It's like, no, this idea has been embedded in their head that like Christians are evil. Now, if you ask them, do you think Christians are evil? They wouldn't say yes. They'd say, no, I don't think Christians are evil. They don't even know what they think. That's the point, right? They don't even understand their own mind. Because when they're presented with a circumstance, their reaction to that circumstance is dependent on whether it's a Christian or a Muslim in the subject line. And they don't realize that they've been programmed to believe that Christians do not have a right to their beliefs. They have been programmed. Their actual belief in effect and in actuality, when they go to vote or, you know, when they argue with their friends, their belief, whether they know it or not, is that Christians do not have the right to religion in this country. They should be and are denied that, rightfully so, because their beliefs are evil and they hurt other people. Now, even if that belief is exactly the same or even more moderate than the Muslim belief, they haven't been programmed to believe that about Muslims, so they don't. It's not a conscious decision on their part. They aren't humans. They're animals. They're mud. They're automatons. And they should be embarrassed and they should be ashamed. And it's a choice they're making to be automatons. Not a difficult question to ask. Would I think the same thing if this was Christians? Would I think the same thing if this was Jews? Would I have the same stance I have about a spy ring being, you know, controlled by a foreign government if it was any government other than Israel? How is it that in the subconscious of the American mind, so many of these little delineations have been established that people don't even realize that they are perpetuating themselves? Christians, bad. White people, bad. White people being collective, bad. Conservatives, bad. The past, bad. Muslim, good. Jewish, good. Like, these are just, they've been established and they dictate people's views, and they've never thought to question these underlying premises. And again, I think that relates to the, it relates to the Biden story in that they just frame it again, just this assumption, this propagandized established fact in the liberal mind that just has no connection with reality that, and again, this is why I don't even want to talk about this one article. This is the pervasive issue with everything. That they establish these supposed facts that they then reinforce over and over and over again towards a point to where it's to a point that people like can't even contend with the suggestion of reality. The thing I'm thinking about now is the transgender kids. There's never been any proof or even suggestion that there exists proof that mutilating children would improve their mental health. It's an absurd statement. It's absurd on the face of it. They've, and they have never presented proof of their assertion. They just decided it was the truth one day. And they just shoved that down everybody's throat to the point that now if you don't want, you know, your daughter having to race against men on the track or change with men in the locker room, then it's assumed that you are therefore in favor of and helping to perpetuate genocide against trans people because you refuse to acknowledge their existence and therefore want them to die and you don't care if they kill themselves. You're actually for that. And it's like, but have you ever questioned the underlying assumption? Have you ever asked them to prove their assertion that mutilating a kid helps? Like, and this is what I mean. It's just whether it's the, you know, Trump is vindictive and he's going to use the power of the government to go after his enemies. And then they act on that assertion, right? Then what they do in pleading the fifth or hiring lawyers to try to, you know, fight Trump or, you know, impose these injunctions with the judges to stop Trump. It's all predicated on this baseless assumption that he is going to use the power of the government to be a fascist. And it's just like, have you never questioned these underlying assumptions? Have you never asked yourself and just interrogated your own belief system? Never occurred to you to do that. It's never once occurred to you that saying Muslims can reject same-sex weddings, but Christians can't, that might make you kind of a hypocrite. It's never, you've never interrogated your own beliefs to even the shallowest degree. And anybody that's thought about that, it would not be hard. You know, come interview me. Do you believe that Muslims should be able to not participate in same-sex weddings? Yes, of course they should. They have a freedom of religion. They shouldn't be forced to do anything that contradicts their religion. Well, do you believe that Christians should? Yes, they shouldn't have to do anything that contradicts their religion. Like, if you don't have the same answer to those two questions, you're not a human being. I'm sorry to tell you this. You should not be able to vote. You should not be allowed to have children. You should have the humility to recognize that you are incapable of expressing your opinion on anything and that it would be irresponsible for you to pretend like you have a viewpoint on anything. And well, I'll get to the headlines on the other side. Just think, just if people could just think for themselves and just ask like one or two questions about their fundamental beliefs.
Fox News alert, the Ayatollah's gone into hiding. He's believed to be holed up inside an underground bunker northeast of the Capitol. Iranian proxies, which have been severely degraded, are threatening to commit acts of terror against American troops and American ships in the region.
And sources are telling ABC News that President Trump has approved the attack plans for Iran that were presented to him.
And American businesses are now bracing for cyber attacks. The whole world's watching.
In light of that news, I have a message directly from the president, and I quote, based on the fact that there's a substantial chance of negotiations that may or may not take place with Iran in the near future, I will make my decision whether or not to go within the next 2 weeks. That's a quote directly from the president for all of you today.
What's your take on that? Because people say, well, that's just the press secretary. No, that's Trump talking. Now it looks like he's given himself more breathing room 2 weeks when we were coming down to the deadline. And the last deadline passed, obviously, and within 24 hours, Israel struck.
Trump is speaking through her, right? Those are his words. And he's waiting because you put U.S. bombers over there with bunker buster bombs. It embroils America into something that could last a decade. He knows the implications of this, and you don't want to overreact. You don't want to actually do something that might not need to be done if you can avoid it with some kind of negotiations, which Trump is the master negotiator, right? So you've got Iran, you've got Trump, and you've got Netanyahu, right? So two of those are really going at it. What Trump is saying, I believe, in that message is, I don't want to embroil America in a war for the next decade plus.
And that's what he's been saying the last 48 hours, or really 24, is, I only want to do this if it doesn't turn into a long war. Now he's learning it will. And so sanity is prevailing, hopefully. And, wow, that's so important. We're out of time, Dr. Elliott. People need to call and get a free consultation or go sign on the email. You guys are the best. You have the best prices selling it at wholesale. That's why you're top rated. Most other places are a scam. It's just true. Gold and silver is great, but not the way people sell numismatics and collectibles. It's a scam, folks. It goes from bad to worse. You're the place to go to. You can also roll over financial instruments. It's so easy, but people need to go to kepm.com/gold, 720-605-3900. And folks really need to take action now.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Not all. Dealers are created equal, not our brokers are created equal. When our biggest thing that we do for people is, I believe it's your money. This is why we charge zero when you liquidate, zero. I want you to get everything that you invested in. Gold and silver do really well in these times of things. You can move over your IRA, your old 401ks, cash assets to get out of harm's way, get out of the path of this hurricane to safe ground. Don't overpay for your stuff. I'm telling you. Do not overpay for your stuff when you don't need to. Always buy bullion and do it with somebody who doesn't charge you when you liquidate.
Oh, I forgot that part. You're the only big company that does that. That is massive. No charge on liquidation. Massive. And again, ladies and gentlemen, you can look at the wholesale price every day of silver and gold. When you buy it, you know. These other places, I'm sorry, there's 90% of them go from scams to absolutely criminal in my view. That's why we don't have gold sponsors and stuff, because there's so few that are good. Plus, I got out of it 14 years ago, right at the top, told everybody, nope, now's not the time. And then 2 years ago was the time. We've been proven right. Only exploded. The best investment there is. All I'm going to do is steer you right, folks, because I treat you like I want to be treated on the supplements, on the products, on the sponsors, only the best. And that's Kirk Elliott, Precious Metals, KEPM.com/gold, 720-605-3900. Call now for your free consultation.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The American Journal. I'm going to open up phone lines for your calls, 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call, 1-877-789-2539. Well, let me just, we'll just finish up with this New York Times article about Biden, where they spend the first half of the article laying the groundwork, prepping the reader through rhetorical manipulation to see this entire conflict as poor, innocent, upstanding, genius Joe Biden defending himself and his poor, innocent family from the contrivances of fascist Trump, who because of Biden's, you know, decent debate performance last year, you know, apparently now is this crazy conspiracy theory about Joe Biden. They spent the first half of the article sort of laying that groundwork, framing the article in that way, only to then admit, essentially, that, yeah, Biden was not aware of what he was signing, of what was being signed on his behalf, that the auto pen was used to sign things that Joe Biden had no knowledge of and had not seen at least the updated versions of. At the end of the term, Mr. Biden reduced the sentence of nearly 4,000 federal convicts and preemptively pardoned politically prominent people he considered potential targets of Mr. Trump for criminal investigations. Again, it's just all so backwards. I don't think there's such a thing as preemptive pardon. I just don't think that is legally a concept that is real. And if it is, you can just assert that you think that the next president is likely going to be vindictive or, how did they put it, have potential targets of Mr. Trump for criminal investigations. So you can just say, because I think that this person is going to act in a partisan way and weaponize the Justice Department, I therefore am going to pardon people, even though I have no proof that Trump's criminal investigations are politically motivated. It's just built on this assumption that's just an assertion that just has no proof, and they just say it, which is why they spend the whole first part of the article acting like that's a legitimate, frame of mind. Mr. Biden said in Thursday's interview that he had his staff use an auto pin for the warrants because he had granted clemency to so many people. The auto pin was used in all on 25 pardons and commutation warrants from last December to January. Some of the individual warrants included large batches of names because they all fell into the same broad policy category, like reducing the sentence of nonviolent drug offenders who met standards Mr. Biden established. Mr. Trump and his congressional allies are focused in particular on trying to delegitimize Mr. Biden's final batch of clemency actions. Focus on trying to delegitimize. Nobody's trying to delegitimize anything. They are not legitimate. They are not legitimate. Nobody's trying to delegitimize anything. They aren't legitimate. And that's being exposed by the evidence of Biden's own operatives. So he gave this 10-minute interview, I guess, in which the Times requested, as part of its reporting on the investigations, Mr. Biden have shielded those people along with members of his family so they would not have to run up large legal bills from politically motivating investigations by the Trump Justice Department. Again, we know that the Biden administration did launch a great number of politically motivated investigations against Donald Trump for the sole intent and purpose of driving up his legal bills, distracting him, preventing him from, mounting a campaign in 2024, and just to imprison him and send a message to any American who attempted to defeat the deep state that we will destroy you whether or not you've done anything wrong. That has happened. That did happen. There's been no recompense for that. Partly because, this is how backwards it is. They do things that are politically motivated. They completely, abuse their power. Again, it's like we forget that they're, it's all just dependent entirely on who's writing the article. It would seem to me like people just had principles. None of this would be an issue if they were actually against the weaponization of the government against political opponents. They would have been against it for Trump. These people don't actually care about anything. They don't actually believe anything. It's all just a scam. Everybody knows how vindictive he is. So we knew what they do, what they're doing now, said Mr. Biden. I unconsciously made all those decisions. Everybody knows how vindictive he is. Yeah, just assert that. I don't provide any proof for it. Can't actually defend against it. But you're pardoning Fauci and Mark Milley for crimes they've never been even accused of. This just makes no sense. Just none of this makes any sense. White House counsel Ed Siskel on October 30th, 2024, notified his senior staff to expect a flood of lobbying for clemency grants at the administration's end and laid out a process for an orderly review. The final step, he wrote, the president makes the final decision on the final pardon and or commutation state. Over the next 3 months, Biden made four major sets of clemency actions that were recorded with an auto pin. The emails received by the Times included discussions about all four batches. Three applied to broad categories of people. He reduced the sentences of inmates sent to home confinement during the pandemic and certain nonviolent drug offenders. The emails reflect the White House activity surrounding each of these tranches, including the dates of the meetings at which White House officials indicate Mr. Biden made decisions and names of the senior aides in attendance. They also showed that the use of AutoPen was managed by Mr. Biden's White House staff secretary, Ms. Feldman. She wanted to receive written accounts confirming Mr. Biden's oral constructions in the meeting before having it used to produce the warrants recording the clemency actions email show. The aides refers to those written accounts of the meetings at which Biden delivered oral decisions as blurbs. These accounts were drafted by aides to the senior advisors who participated in the key meetings, like Biden's chief of staff, Jeffrey D. Zients, and Mr. Siskel. The assistants who drafted the blurbs were not themselves in the room with Mr. Biden, according to the list of meeting participants. The email implied that Mr. Siskel and Mr. Zients relayed what Mr. Biden had said to the assistants, who then documented it. Okay, so it was Siskel and Zients that were Zients. I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name, nor do I want to. For the earlier sets of large-scale clemency actions, the process sometimes took several days after the meeting with Mr. Biden. For two crucial meetings at the end of his term, it took place on the same days. They say Mr. Biden did not individually approve each name for the conditional pardons applied to the large number of people. He and aides instead just did whole batches. Even after Mr. Biden made the decision, one former aide said, the Bureau of Prisons kept providing additional information about specific inmates, resulting in small changes to the list. Rather than ask Mr. Biden to keep signing revised versions, his staff waited and then ran the final version through the auto pen, which they saw as a routine procedure. They just, but it's, that's what I mean. New York Times just writes this article as if this is normal. As if what I just read is totally standard and doesn't just completely confirm everything the Republicans have been saying. So they spend the first half of the article framing Donald Trump as vindictive and the concern about Joe Biden's auto pen use as a Republican conspiracy theory that's motivated by purely partisanship and, you know, tyranny because, the Republicans just hate Joe Biden and are just making things up to try to get him with. Spend the first half of the article laying out that, and then the second half of the article just confirming that everything the Republicans are saying is absolutely true. Yeah, they got the oral approval of Joe Biden, just, you know, not from him directly. What? Yeah, they got, you know, they didn't get, okay, so he didn't sign it, sure. But he did, you know, approve the auto pen being used. Except he kind of didn't. He did give the oral permission, according to other people that aren't Joe Biden. But he absolutely, you know, approved of the list, only he didn't see them before they were signed. Okay, so ignoring all of the rhetoric, ignoring all of the framing, looking at just the facts presented here, outside of the, again, very sophisticated and well-constructed manipulation of the New York Times, the facts actually in this article, and just the facts, say that, yeah, Joe Biden's assistants and aides used the auto pen to affix Joe Biden's signature to documents he had never seen and had no knowledge of. So, I mean, you would think that these people were even remotely ingenuous about their beliefs and their concerns and their entire worldview, then the title of this article would be something like Joe Biden confirms aides use of auto pen without his knowledge. Instead, it presents literally the exact opposite of that, with the headline saying that actually Joe Biden was in charge. Biden says he made clemency decisions that were recorded with auto pen, by the fact that in the article itself, it says, yeah, they kept changing the list and did not present it to Biden before they signed it with the auto pen. More quotes. 3 minutes later, Mr. Zients hit reply all and wrote, I approve the use of auto pen for the execution of all of the following pardons. You're not saying Biden does. He said, I do. I approve the use of auto pen to sign these clemences. And again, you've got the White House doctor who made the statements about Biden's cognitive decline taking the Fifth Amendment. So there's criminal activity. So there must have been some sort of criminal activity. I'll take your calls now. Let's go out to Nanny in Puerto Rico. Nanny in Puerto Rico. Thank you so much for calling.
Good morning, Harrison.
Good morning.
You know, kind of what you were just talking about, the auto pen ties into a little bit about what I want to get into, like the disheartening aspect of Trump's failure with this Epstein stuff. Well, I put it more on Bondi, but his statements defending her and playing it off as if he didn't even know about, like, people are still talking about this guy. Absolutely absurd. But he cashed in all of his political capital, I feel like, trying to protect her and get past this. Now when it comes to the auto pen situation, where are you going to go? Then they can have this grounds to say, you know, he's only choosing certain things that he wants to go after him or go after. And, that, you know, there's the claims of him being involved with Epstein and whatnot and all this. But now it's kind of shining light that maybe, you know, what if, you know? And the whole point about what I think is a big difference between this leftist cultist mentality and the Make America Great movement is that on the right, the Make America Great movement, we want people to be held accountable. It's the right thing to do. If that leaves us with the black eye, that doesn't matter. It's about doing what's right. We can't stand for these sexual crimes against children or really any person. But we're just sweeping things under the rug at whoever's behest, and it's not what we voted for. We wanted a chance for a clean slate, and it's completely falling apart.
Yep, I completely agree. And you know, I do worry about, you know, Steve Bannon said that he predicts that without releasing the Epstein files, the Republicans will lose 30 to 40 seats in the midterms. We're rapidly approaching the midterms. And like, in a way, I understand it because Trump, like, I understand why he'd be frustrated that, like, he's expecting, like, the big, beautiful bill gets passed and it's July 4th and he's expecting to, like, be lauded and celebrated. And instead, everybody's pissed at him about Epstein. I'm sure he really, you know, was working hard to get the big bill passed, and then nobody gives a damn about it because of what's going on with Epstein. I understand why he'd be frustrated a little bit at that, but it's a completely self-inflicted wound. It is completely the fault of Trump and his administrators who, you know, kept making this an issue, kept making promises that they failed to deliver on. And again, this is the heart of the problem with America. We can't get anything done. We can't get anything for us. We are not in charge. Trump's not in charge. And that's, you know, what's being exposed here. So I completely agree with you. I think it's incredibly disturbing, you know, how much we're sacrificing keep the Epstein files under wraps. It's just absurd. So what do you think you should do?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I'm just thinking about that. Like, I hope that we see, like, J.D. Vance put to, like, lead the charge on this, and he establishes the people to start maybe working on a special counsel or whatever. But I think we need to get J.D. Vance or somebody with equal credibility and, like, that same drive that's going to follow through and actually accomplish something on. Maybe, you know, maybe they're task saturated. Maybe they're divided on too many different aspects between the border, between the economy. Bondi's fighting off, you know, Supreme Court stuff here left and right. So maybe if we can kind of put somebody on the side that's going to focus on this and feed us updates rather than it coming from Trump.
Yeah. Well, I think you're again, the point about that we're not the left, that we aren't doing this for political ends. Like, if the Epstein files have Trump in them, guess what? We still want them released. Guess what? We still want them released. Like, we don't care. We actually just want the truth. We actually just want justice. And again, it's just like, are they not ashamed? To me, again, the thing that stands out is Jamie Raskin. That Jamie Raskin never says anything about Epstein until Trump says, hey, we're not releasing the Epstein files. You know, get over it. This is old news. And then suddenly they're putting forward bills and going, we have to release the Epstein files. We're not going to let Trump get away with this cover up. And it's like, are you not ashamed of your just naked partisanship, your naked, just obvious and apparent to everybody dishonesty, disingenuousness? that you've never cared about the girls that were taken advantage of, never cared about the blackmail implications, never cared about the cover-up and the intelligence agencies, but the instant that you think it might be useful to go against Trump, suddenly you're out there going, we've got to release the files. They must be released. I will stand on this. We'll not let him get away. And it's like, you despicable scum. You're just scum. You really are. And the left is scum, and the people on the right trying to distract us from this, they're just scum. They really are. And they I don't think they understand that we're just not scum. I think you're right about that, that like we just want truth. We just want justice. That really is genuinely what drives us. But just like, you know, Republicans can't just the mainstream media will never treat any Republican concern as legitimate, even when they agree with the concern. They just will downplay it or act like, well, this is a concern. But the reason you're concerned about it is because you're dishonest and evil. And it's I don't know what to do because we're just being honest. We're just telling the truth. We're just trying to get justice. And these people are – it's such an anathema. It's such a bizarre concept to them. They can't even, you know, understand that mindset. And then they try to project it on us. Like I think it was Gunther Eagleman is his name on X. And, you know, right in the middle of all the Epstein stuff, he puts out a – say he goes, just like that, nobody's talking about the auto pen. It's like, wait, are you suggesting that the Democrats, in order to distract from Biden's auto pen scandal, somehow tricked Kash Patel and Pam Bondi and Dan Bongino into going on a media tour to talk about the Epstein files and to hide the evidence that they'd been promising for literally years before that and to lie about it blatantly, obviously, to deny the existence of a black book, a client list? You know, say that he committed suicide and that there were no conspirators, despite the fact that all of those things have been well established in, you know, official court proceedings, maybe not the suicide, but certainly the client list and the co-conspirators, that these things were actually necessary to achieve convictions of people like Ghislaine Maxwell, who's convicted of trafficking children, and you can't traffic children without somebody to traffic them to. Like, you really think that this was a distraction by the Democrats? There's not a Democrat involved in this. It involves Kash Patel. It involves Dan Bongino. It involves Donald Trump. It involves Pam Bondi. No Democrat had to do this. You did this to yourselves by being dishonest, by lying, by promising things you couldn't achieve, and by now covering up an Israeli blackmail ring, which just is perfectly in line with everything else that they're willing to do for Israel, even if it's to their own detriment. Even if it, you know, makes it harder to get mass deportations, they have focused on deporting anti-Semites. Even if it is a blatant violation of the First Amendment, the Trump administration is enacting anti-Semitism laws around the country and throughout the government. So time and time again, they're starting wars with Iran. They're allowing Israel to commit genocide. They're threatening the ICC over their conviction of Benjamin Netanyahu. Time and time again, it's been shown that the Trump administration is willing to actually hurt America for the benefit of Israel. And the Epstein files align perfectly with that proclivity. And then they say, oh, this is the Democrats trying to distract from the auto pen scandal. Do you think we're stupid or are you stupid? These are the only possibilities. Again, I just want to reemphasize that they are desperately attempting to frame this as a partisan situation. That what they want in your mind is anytime you hear people talking about Epstein, you think, "Bah, this is just they're just trying to get Trump and they're just leftist and I'm a MAGA person, so I'm not going to fall for that. I'm going to ignore Epstein." They think you're stupid. They think you're stupid and they think that they can trick you into going along with the pervert blackmailing genociders by claiming that you're a leftist if you don't. Just don't fall for it. Just don't fall for it. It's not hard. It's not hard not to fall for it. And just like that, nobody's talking about the auto pen scandal. whose fault is that? And whose fault is it that Elon Musk isn't supporting the Republicans anymore? Whose fault is it? Again, just don't fall for it. And the left shouldn't fall for this either. By the way, the left shouldn't fall for this either. The primary message needs to come out of this is if you're American, you should want to know what happened to Jeffrey Epstein. If you're American, you should be against a foreign country, even Israel, having black male spy rings in our country. And if you're American, you should want our government to be in control of Americans and not playing janitor for foreigners. Do not fall for the lie that this is partisan in any way. You're either pro-America or you're trying to cover up Epstein. Let's go to Kim in Wisconsin now. Thank you for the call, Nanny. Let's go to Kim in Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Good morning, Harrison. I just am so happy that you're back on the air. I missed you so much that last week, and I'd have to say that you're almost an addiction to me. I just hang on every word. Anyway, I can't compliment you enough. It's like, you know, you're the brightest star out there right now, and for me anyway.
Do go on, sir. No, you're embarrassing me. I thank you very much. I miss being on. What is it about me that you'd say is your fit? No, I'm kidding. But no, I do appreciate it, and I do my best, sir. Thank you.
Oh, okay. It's all true, and it's from the heart. But you know what? One of the things I to go back to, you know, some of the complaints that I've had for, you know, 50 years or so, is that we have too many people in jail in this country. You know, we have too many prisoners, too many people on parole, too many people on supervision. We have too many police. We have a police state, and it's really stifling the country to a great extent. You know, reducing liberty to a great extent, and it's been a complaint that I've had personally for, you know, almost my entire life. It's just amazing the amount of rules and petty rules and taxes and just plain I don't know what to call harassment.
Yeah, methods of control that have to be implemented when you have a population that can't control itself and can't, you know, be respectful of the liberties that they're given, so they take advantage of them and make it worse for everybody. I completely agree, and that is one of those issues that, again, that don't think to be a left or right issue. You hardly hear the right ever talk about it. Unless the only time you hear the right talk about prison conditions is when they get sent to prison. Is when like Owen Schroyer gets sent to prison and comes out being like, yeah, we got to do something about this. This is a mess. But unless it's Steve Bannon or, you know, some sort of other political prisoner that the leftists have thrown into jail in the last little while, Republicans don't seem to care about that. But you're right. It's a massive symptom of the underlying incongruity between the laws and the behavior of the people who are supposed to adhere to those laws. Very big issue. I throw welfare into that too. It's just endless problems.
Just got in my methylene blue, ultra methylene blue USP grade from thealexjonesstore.com. And I've heard all the rants and raves about this. I'm really interested to see how I'm going to feel. I'm going to do a third dropper and then some water right now. And I am going to see. Yeah, that's plenty. Maybe that's a little bit more. I'm gonna mix this up. And pretty excited to see how this is gonna work. So after I fully drink this, I will let everybody know the effects of hopefully of what is the unlimited power.
What's going on, Xers? Jay Rocket here. Just giving y'all an update. It's been an hour past doing the one dropper of the ultramethylene blue USP grade at the alexjonesstore.com. Currently at the gym right now, and it's hard to explain what I feel other than I do feel the mental clarity. I don't have any cloudy thoughts. My focus seems relaxed, but very on point. And the energy kind of feels clean. No jittery, things like that. I haven't really felt any tingling or anything. Maybe if I'll probably take a you know, an extra dropper next time. This is on an empty stomach as well. So definitely feel just cool, calm, and collected, but very focused, very centralized. It's a very calm zen feeling. So if you haven't gotten to try this stuff yet, you'll need to go to the thealexjonesstore.com and get your methylene blue today.
Hero doctor, who the DOJ was trying to send to prison for life for not poisoning his patients. We'll be very excited to talk to them in a moment, but I do want to spend this first 5 minutes to take more of your calls. We've got some interesting ones here. We've got Hillbilly Mystic in Missouri, who says he's called in before and never gotten on. Now's your chance, Hillbilly Mystic. Thanks for calling in. Thank you for holding. You're on the air, sir.
Harrison, I'm so glad you're back. We love you here in this family. We love Chad Geiser too, but we call him Chad because I think Laura Logan was on one time, and she said he was a good friend of hers, and she's like, oh, I love Chad Geiser on there, so we call him Chad here in the South.
Chad Geiser, I like it.
We'd love to have you back, but yeah, dude, I want to talk about Armageddon.
Okay.
Because I'm in a lodge. I'm in several lodges, not the Freemasons, but we study God's laws, and one of the laws you can't, like, Google or hear about because a lot of stuff's been removed from books, so you have to go to books around the 1900s.
Yep.
But there's a law in there. You know, you hear about law of attraction, all that other stuff, but there's a law in there called the Law of Babel. Have you heard of that one?
The Law of Babel?
Yes.
No, I'm familiar with the Tower of Babel.
Yeah, so that's related to that. So the Law of Babel says if you play God in any way, that you're going to, you know, what's going to happen is something like Gomorrah.
Right.
And so, like, there's just so many existential threats we have facing us. I think a lot of the things in politics with Epstein and everything is theater. I mean, I think what's really going on is we have, you know, self-replicating nanobots being sprayed on us.
Mm.
I mean, the reality is horrific what's going on. They've changed the human genome. They're blocking out the sun.
I mean,
you talk about this stuff with people that know. You talk about people don't know, they think you're crazy. But if you talk about the truth with people that know, I mean, it's pretty overwhelming what's really going on in the world.
Yeah.
And, if Trump was America first and all this, he would have gotten out of NATO, UN, you know, Epstein would have been – he had it teed up to drain the swamp with the 14 terabytes of Epstein video.
Yeah.
I mean, so he's not going to drain the swamp.
He's not doing a great job. I would just say the only thing about Armageddon that gets me, because I was thinking about this, especially because I was supposed to hate host that pastor, Greg Locke, mm-hmm. who, you know, his support of Israel is all predicated on the belief that we're in the end times and that, you know, this is revelations being fulfilled. And I think that's very prideful. I think that is an act of pride to think we are the generation that is the most important. We are the end generation. What we do will bring Jesus Christ back. And it's like, have some humility. You're probably not. You're probably not, because
hundreds of thousands of
people have thought they were before and they were wrong. And I just say, you know, when it comes to Armageddon, like the end of the world, it's like, but what if we're not? But what if it's not? Then all you're doing is justifying, you know, the mass murder of children, which you never would do otherwise. But somehow, because you think, well, this is the end days. This is Armageddon. This is how it's supposed to happen. I'm so important that it's okay that I'm supporting this because I'm so important, because we're the generation that matters. And it's like, okay, so you're supporting things you would never support otherwise, because you think you're so important and you're the most important generation. That's just strictly pride. And you should think about that. You should have some humility. I'm not saying you, Hillbilly Mystic, because I get where you're coming from. Just when I hear Armageddon or the end of the world, I just think, like, all right, let's act like it's not the end of the world and don't justify things you think are going to bring about the cataclysm to end the age. Thank you very much for the call, Hillbilly Mystic. Folks, if you want to stay on the air, I believe we'll have time after the interview to take more calls. If you want to stay on the line, You're more than welcome. But if you don't want to hold for the next 30 minutes, I don't blame you. I am going to be joined on the other side by Ed Zoll and others to talk about a good move by Pam Bondi. We're going to give Pam Bondi and the DOJ a little pat on the head for dropping this case and setting a very important precedent for how to deal with doctors who refuse to kill their own patients. At least that's how I see it. We'll be back on the other side. Stay with us, folks.
How do I explain to people that my tongue is blue? Because I love this stuff, methylene blue. I'm able to work like 18-hour days sometimes. This stuff is like rocket fuel.
I didn't know you were going to plug this. You even ordered it yourself, I later learned. What is the effect of our medical-grade methylene blue been on you, Roger?
Incredible, both physical and mental energy and focus. I mean, it really is like rocket fuel. Oh, you still like Brain Force? Back when I did the show with Owen Schroyer, the original, the real War Room, I was a big aficionado of Brain Force and Brain Force Plus. This is even a greater product. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Well, I've not had any since Friday. I only take it every couple of days. So I'm going to take my dose of methylene blue at my Topo Chico. It is amazing. And people ask me, what does it do? It cleans out your mitochondria. It skips the oxidization process in the cell. It's like iodine at the next level. It is such a game changer. Roger Stone, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. God bless you.
Listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My guest is Ed Zoll this hour, and he's, why don't you introduce yourself, Ed, and your guest there. I just can't see who it is from here.
Yes. Thank you so much, Harrison. It's good to see you. I'm glad you're back, by the way.
I'm always worried
when I don't see you on air for a while. But I'm sure maybe you had a vacation.
He's lit his candles of his vigil for you. So.
That's funny.
Yeah, so you don't have to do that anymore, Ed.
This is Matt Scali. He's the director of Died Suddenly. Is the man I do all the work
with. Of course.
With
okay.
Here.
All right, I see you now. Like I see you now on big screen. Yeah, from our last
interview.
I'm just
his tag along, you know. When he gets these big invites, he just throws me a bone. So
it's very good to see both of you.
I'll take it.
But you know, while I was out, I was thinking, I was making a list of guests that I wanted, Matt to reach out to when I got back, and Ed Zoll, your name was on the top of my list because I know, you guys had a major victory this week for sort of an unexpected victory, right? Tell us about this doctor. What he was being charged with. They were trying to send him to jail for life for injecting people with saline solution, which is just, it doesn't hurt anybody. It just is not the vaccine. So he refused to, give us the whole story. Give us the breakdown of exactly who this doctor is, what he was being charged with, and what's happening now.
So Dr. Kirk Moore is a plastic surgeon in Utah. He was at the height of the pandemic being approached by patients, by friends, by children, parents, of course, given consent, of course, to try to help them, try to return to some normalcy. And initially, it was house calls for COVID, flu, and all the things. He actually believes very similar to you and I on the pandemic and the nature of what we all experienced. But when it came to the mandates and lockdowns, he was faced with the prospect of maybe trying to help in a different way. And what it was he applied to be a provider of the COVID-19 shots, Pfizer, J&J, and Moderna. And he actually signed up as one of the early ones to have it shipped out, both to test it, both to kind of inspect a little bit more, and also to provide fake vaccine cards to adults and to children. Well, the injection is saline.
They weren't printed. Like, he didn't make fake. He used the ones they sent and gave it to them as if he had given him the vaccine. And he didn't, if someone wanted a vaccine, he would administer it. Like, he wasn't saying you have to, but, he was a lifeline to people who didn't want to take the poison.
Yeah. So, the DOJ, eventually caught wind of this. There was an individual, I'll just say a woman who was super anti-vax. She lived in California, came out to get the vaccine card, returned and said, Hey, look, see, I got the vaccine card. And her employer was like, yeah, okay. And they called the Utah Public Health and got this ball rolling on this. But, about 2 years later now, the DOJ had brought this massive case. It's actually the biggest case that the District of Utah and in that region was dealing with this summer. It's everyone was paying attention to it in the Department of Justice, and it had already been 1 week into the trial. Now, we heard about it about 2 weeks ago. We came on your show with Chase Geiser while you were out, and I was reporting from the courthouse in Utah, just learning everything you can. You know, when you look into something, you start soaking up and you start really learning a lot of the details, which you're not going to find out until you go on the ground. I got a lot of stuff to share about what the DOJ and the deep state have been doing to people. But the short of this is that that trial and our work to bring influencers, politicians, and information to the public, just a huge uproar, that led to Saturday morning, Pam Bondi calling the district attorney, Mr. Vitti, and telling him, you have to stop this trial immediately. He called the judge, he called the defense, and Kirkmore and his family were partying, to say the least. They were elated and thankful. Of course, the InfoWars and everybody who covered this case and were supporting him.
And they, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, they were trying to send him to jail for life, right? I mean, that was one of the possible outcomes of this, is that he would have died in prison if this had gone through and he'd been convicted.
He's 60. They're trying to send him to 35 years. I mean, yeah, he would have died in prison.
Yeah, so we have to give props to MTG. She reached out to us on our, DM'd us on our private account on, Died Suddenly, and she said, she read Ed's article, give me more information, and she was in constant contact, give me his number, and, on Friday she wrote us and said, hey, something big's gonna happen, just wait. And, you know, Senator Lee got involved. It takes us as we the people. This is a victory for we the people. There's no doubt about it. This has never happened where a federal case had gone midstream in the trial and they stopped it. They just had their star witness on. And then the next day, boom. What we did was we rallied the people. People from the area came out. We had a big rally on Friday. His son spoke. And, you know, his son was given 1.5 million views on his speeches. And jurors had to walk by and see that, Ed. And I know – I'm curious to see what would have happened if it would have gone forward. But I like this victory even more because they had mud on their face. Those prosecutors, they probably – didn't even care. They just wanted to make a name for themselves. And that's the shame. When we found out about what and how far they went to put this man in jail, undercovers went in there. Ed, you can share what they did with the Indian doctors.
Yeah. So Harrison, I will jump ahead of you, but yeah, there was so much prosecutorial malfeasance. And one of the cases, they actually threatened these doctors that basically were involved with a nonprofit. That if the Dr. Moore didn't take any money, by the way, for anything he did it all for free.
$0.
But if you showed up with an orange, you showed up in his office, they knew you were there to get a fake vaccine card. And then he would say, if you do want to donate money, you do want to do something, donate to this nonprofit. It's run by the Gopis. And what the prosecution did, Harrison, is they showed up at the Gopis' house. They said, you know, you're here on a green card. You know, if you were to get charged, even with a misdemeanor, probably going to get deported back to India. You should probably think about that when we send you a summons to testify against Dr. Moore. I mean, this is nasty stuff, Harrison. Done with your tax dollars, done with my tax dollars.
And you know what's even worse and more egregious is the way they handcuffed him to defend himself. He couldn't bring up the motive of why he did this. We couldn't bring up the vials that were shown, and we showed that specific vials, the batch numbers, showed that it killed up to 37 people in one of these batches. Just alone.
That's wild.
How many people did he save by not injecting this into children? And a lot of these were parents who reached out and said, hey, my kid can't go to school, blah, blah, blah. What can you do? And he stepped up.
Right. And obviously the real threat here is that it's like this violates so many actual laws. The HIPAA violation, you know, you have to demand, you know, employers demanding to know what medical procedures their employees have gone through. And the vaccine card itself, to me, is just such an egregious violation of our civil liberties. And it was by standing up for our civil liberties and, you know, not participating in this charade for a vaccine that now everybody acknowledges didn't even help, didn't even stop you from getting the virus in the first place. So, you know, this guy just refused to go along with the very deadly, you know, game of charades that we're playing, the kabuki theater that we're all expected to go along with. He refuses to go along with it, helps people avoid the government insisting that they inject their children with poison, and he gets punished for it. So, you know, that I think is the underlying absurdity of all of this, is the vaccine card itself should have been illegal. Anybody pushing that should be on trial for the rest of their lives. As far as I'm concerned, this guy is a hero. He avoided giving these kids injections, which again is officially acknowledged now to massively increase the risk of myocarditis. Just taking one of the, you know, side effects, myocarditis, you know, you have a 50% chance of dying from it in the first 5 years. And this gives it to a huge number of people, especially young men. And he was refusing to inject that. How did Pam Bondi not know this was going on? That's a concerning aspect to me. It's amazing. It's brilliant that through your actions and, you know, InfoWars and the activists and getting the word out, Marjorie Taylor Greene bringing this awareness to Pam Bondi, that's an amazing thing. That's a great thing. And you're right to, you know, wear this as a victory, you know, show this as a trophy of what we the people can do when we have people in office that actually want to do the right thing. But how did Pam Bondi not know this was happening? How did this get so far with the DOJ to where the trial was already in process before Pam Bondi even realized it was happening and was able to step in and stop it? How many other cases are going on underneath the nose of Pam Bondi that she has no idea about, I wonder?
Well, it's a great question, and I think we discovered part of this while we're out there, Harrison. One, I'm not fully convinced that she didn't know about the case. I know the inference with her public statement is that she learned about it the second that MTG, you know, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene reached out there. The truth is, and I showed this in our second article, I think it was released on Wednesday, that said specifically that Pam Bondi's office herself and the, you know, the office of the DOJ, that they had ordered this Biden-era case forward and that they'd actually turned down a dismissal. And this was completely correct. I got my hands on several documents, including the submission to the Weaponization Working Group Committee, which has Pam Bondi at the head. It has Harmeet Dhillon and Ed Martin, the pardon attorney, on there. They'd received this case. They've received all the information. The Deputy Attorney General, Todd Blanche, actually, I included this in there. He actually had received the email of all the details from the defense team for Dr. Kirkmore. So that this pleading ignorance about not knowing, I don't buy that. What I do buy, however, is that there was a lot of influence and a lot of potential conflicts of interest for Pam Bondi and others at the Department of Justice and even at the Trump White House with Susie Wiles, who worked with Pam Bondi in Florida at the time. Of this kind of lobbying and this coverage of Pfizer, for example. And I detailed in the article, not only had Pam Bondi have a very big conflict of interest in this case, because this really was, to be perfectly frank, it was supposed to be a trial on the safety of the COVID vaccine. Why else would Dr. Kirkmore risk his life, risk his license, and again, do what he did to provide fake vaccine cards and saline shots to children whose parents had given consent? Well, he did this because he really believed that people would die. Credibly so, by the way, we've learned.
Yeah, but how the government spun it is like he's peddling these little cards in his coat and in a dark alley and trying to get rich off $50 or something like that. It was preposterous. It was ridiculous and it was shameful. It truly was shameful. The FDA just came out and did a video saying this has caused myocarditis in so many people. I'm just so thankful that people stepped up and, when they were called and asked to do something, they did. And, this is a great victory and hopefully this will set precedent because there's other people out there who was so affected by this. And, that's what we do. That's why we do what we do. This is why you do what you do every day. And today we have a victory from it and we don't get them a lot, but this is a clear and concise victory for us.
Well, that is absolutely amazing. And of course it is stunning that they wanted to send this guy to jail for 35 years. I mean, especially when you think about the number of violent crimes that we see people get away with on practically a daily basis. Let's just be clear. This guy did not hurt anybody. He didn't trick anybody. He didn't lie to anybody. He didn't say, yeah, I'm giving you the vaccine and then gave him the saline shot and didn't tell him. No, it was his customers wanted the vaccine card, but didn't want the vaccine. He provided that service. I think the way I see this as this confirms you have a right to stand up against tyrannical measures that the government wants to impose on you. They had no right to demand vaccine cards. They had no right to even allow companies to demand vaccine cards. That is an absolute violation of our God-given right to privacy and to decide what we do with our own bodies. And he was able to stand up against that tyranny. And now that's been, you know, confirmed that he was right to stand up against that tyranny, and I'm sure his life has been made hell. I'm sure he's had to sacrifice a lot, but at the end of the day, it's worth it. because he did the right thing. He saved people from having to get this shot. He probably saved a lot of lives. And he, you know, stood up against this, these tyrannical measures that they're trying to impose on us that they only, you know, have been forced to drop because of people like Dr. Moore. If it was up to them, we would all still be wearing masks and getting locked down and getting our 18th booster by this point. But because Americans refused to go along with it, refused to be cowed, we avoided the worst fate of the pandemic. And then, of course, it gets into the actual efficacy of the vaccine, the fact people were dying from it. That's a whole other reason. But hell, even if the vaccine was totally safe and actually worked, you still wouldn't have a right to put it in my arm. So, you know, to me, that is what stands out. What do you think the most important part about this process has been, Ed?
Well, first of all, it's learning you're not powerless. I think that the Department of Justice, and you know this from what InfoWars went through and what you've gone through too, the government can defame you. They can lie about you in indictments. They can feed things to the media, leak things to the media, and you have no defense against it because it's literally your tax dollars. Your resources are being used against you to harm you. Yep. The biggest thing I learned from this is that the government and the Biden and Obama and even kind of deep state holdovers in the Department of Justice, they all play by the same playbook. They intimidate witnesses. They try to rig the case. They try to rig the trial. In this case, for example, the defense was handcuffed.
Yeah, it's about a victory for them. That's really, it turns out, it's like, how can I get that W on my spoke? You know, this, I won this. I defeated them. Even when you knew that there's no victim. And, to Dr. Moore, you know, he did what his Hippocratic oath led him to do. And this is what we need our doctors in. And hopefully a lot of doctors will wake up, because what this was a trial against our medical complex of follow the rules or we're going to come after you with the big dogs of the federal government. And lawfare is just another weapon. We've gone through that. Alex has gone through that. It bankrupts you to defend yourself, and that's unfortunate. And they wanted him in the plea deal to not get restitution for his legal fees. I mean, this is ridiculous. He had to defend himself, and that costs hundreds of thousands or not millions of dollars. This needs to be fixed as well. Our judicial system is weaponized against people who are innocent. So I'm just so encouraged, though, because we can create change when we get to it.
Well, and Harrison, we covered this actually before the election. There is a fund. It's called the Judgment Fund. Mm-hmm. We covered this with Tony West. Remember the brother-in-law of Kamala Harris? The government has a resource pool. They have it for vaccine injuries too. The VAERS data, you know, VAERS fund, the VAERS database, and there's money already put aside for this. The point is that it's, we don't know how to access it. Like, I wouldn't have even known about the weaponization working group committee. I wouldn't have even understood the power of this or our power to submit cases to it had we not stood with Dr. Moore in his defense. And look, there's a lot of committees like this, a lot of resources that are available to us. One, we shouldn't be giving, you know, the power in this way to the government to just control our lives and to destroy us and these other things. But past this, let's be smart about what currently exists. If we have an aircraft carrier, we know we can deploy it to an area. Why don't we do that?
It's kind of, also it's kind of placation of like, they give us these resources like VAERS. You know how disingenuous VAERS is? You know, so many people went to VAERS after they found it out by, it's very difficult to find out about VAERS. But when they did, they couldn't, it went low. I had people come up to me. My mother died and I tried to put in her death and it wouldn't allow me. So I think some of these things are placation.
Yeah. So many doctors I've talked to that say, you know, people come in with vaccine injuries and the other doctors go, well, we don't know that's vaccine injury, so we're not going to report it. So you're right. These things are not trustworthy in the slightest, but expand a little bit on the funds you're talking about and how they were used in this case and how they can be used in the future.
Yeah. So in this case specifically, the judgment fund, that Tony West set up under Barack Obama to pay out their friends, it paid out almost $1 billion in settlements. The government has some leeway in this case, for example, to pay resources to Dr. Kirkmore and honestly, frankly, to others who are abused in this case. Broadly speaking, the weaponization working group, if you have a case, and I'd hate to flood your DMs. I apologize ahead of time, Harrison and InfoWars team. But if you have a case that you feel that it falls in the same breath, which the government under Barack Obama or Joe Biden was used to destroy you, attack you, destroy your business. And it was done for political reasons. It was done, it was weaponized against you. You have the ability to actually submit to this weaponization working group committee. And you can submit through Ed Martin, Harmeet Dillon, even the attorney general herself, that you can reach out to Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche for this too, just like the defense team is. You have to go through a lawyer though. And the resources, broadly speaking, on this, it shouldn't just be a small fund that's set aside for vaccine injuries or honestly those that lost all kinds of innocence during the pandemic. I'll just share one example, Harrison. In this case specifically, Chris Anderson, she was a co-defendant for Dr. Kirkmore. When the federal marshals showed up to arrest them, they came in force. They treated them like they were terrorists. And this was partly because the district attorney in this case that took over and was overseeing the trial, this man, he made his bones at the Department of Justice literally prosecuting Al-Qaeda. Like he was in charge of going after criminals and you know, the supposed terrorists at Guantanamo and all these other things. But anyway, this mentality. Her grandkids were present. Her grandkids watched as Granny was literally basically raided by a bunch of armed men in blacked out SUVs and taken away. I think it's like, is this America?
Right.
My goodness. Well, it has become. It hasn't. The truth tellers in this country have been criminalized. And the biggest thing we have to learn from this is no, you're not alone. And it is not right that you're treated this way. We have a voice. We have power. We have to use it.
Absolutely. And thank God for the likes of Marjorie Taylor Greene to actually take this on and for Pam Bondi to respond to it. You know, I doubt Pam Bondi was totally oblivious to this, but it does seem like with things like the Epstein situation, maybe she just didn't have the time to focus on this. You know, she got some briefing. I was, oh, there's this doctor. He was doing something with vaccines. If you can sign off that. And she's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And just signs off. But it seems like the Trump administration's maybe not focusing on some of the stuff they should be focusing on. So it's up to us to bring their attention to it. Is there anything else you think that we need to be focusing on here? I mean, it's amazing that, you know, Dr. Moore was able to be spared from his having his life destroyed by this. But it makes me wonder, okay, who else is on trial right now that needs attention that you know, Pam Bondi could step in and stop a political persecution of? I mean, who's next on the list or what comes next for people that are concerned about the likes of Dr. Moore and the way that he was treated?
Well, I think that we actually need a true trial of the COVID vaccine.
Right.
And I say this to say that during the trial, we actually brought the Chris Duggar, the head of the CDC's mRNA vaccine rollout, worked with Operation Warp Speed. He testified. He spoke about some details I'd never heard before. For example, that satellite tracking devices were sent with the packages of vials to homes, to clinics. I think we need a true trial of the vaccine and specifically what was inside of it, because it's continuing to destroy society. And again, that's what we're involved in. We want to investigate the contents. The call right before we came on was actually speaking about the nanotechnology.
Right.
Now, I think that Anthony Fauci should and could actually now. We're looking at the AutoPen scandal that he did not receive a credible pardon. And that man 100% knew that the human race and the people in this country were being put through an experiment. They were being used as human guinea pigs. Well, it's time for this man to be put on trial. I witnessed for an entire week, Harrison, the power of a federal courthouse, or a federal prosecutorial team. If this same team and the same resources which were levied against Dr. Kirkmore and have been levied against so many other patriots and heroes in this country, if they were levied for just a moment against people like Dr. Anthony Fauci, my goodness, you think the things we would learn, the things we'd be able to expose.
I think that's where we come in. We make films about this that educate the populace. The Dr. Moore had watched one of my films, and he was educated from that. Karen Kingston's work, he was educated by that. It's up to us to educate the people. We've known 100%. This for a long time. Our history books need to be rewritten, and this didn't stop with just this case. 70% of Americans are fully vaccinated with an experimental vaccine.
Yeah, and there's an article
the
right there. I'm sorry to cut you off, Matthew. We're coming to the end of the segment. I want to send people to both watch Died Suddenly. Go to ds2nano.com. That's ds2nano.com to see that. Edward Zoll can be found on X at Real Edward Zoll, and Matthew Scow can be found at Scow Matthew. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for keeping us up to date on this. And congratulations on sparing this doctor's life.
I need support. We are maxed out, and I could do so much more in offense, guaranteed beat them even faster in court. And got this other stuff going on. I'll leave it at that with the Justice Department, the good guys coming in, and the task force on weaponization, that I need funds. So I need you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, subscribe as your monthly donation for $30 a month as a VIP, and know you're doing that bare minimum of support, cancel any time. Not a very hard commitment. You just do it month to month. You charge $30. You're a VIP, and when you want a T-shirt or you want a supplement, you get it because it'll just build up in your account. $40 to spend in the store. You spend 30, you get 40 automatic discounts on everything, special sales, special offers. I'm asking everyone to commit who's never supported the broadcast by buying anything to become a VIP today at thealexjonesstore.com. And then you know you're doing the monthly support. Ever have an issue, don't want to do it, cancel. One click, it's your profile. But by being a VIP, you get massive discounts, special offers, and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com. And it's a way to show your support. We need your backing. I am 100% dauntless. If anything, I get overheated because I've got so much energy and I'm so angry at these people and it bleeds off into my life. I need your backing. I'm backing you. Quite frankly, if you don't back me and my crew, what we're doing, you're nuts. And I'm not mad at you. I'm just saying you're crazy. Evil hates this transmission. We've got their number. And if you don't back the organizations fighting with everything they've got for you, because we're all in this together, well, you've rolled over. You've run up the white flag, quite frankly. And that's what this is. People ask, man, thanks for fighting. Thanks for never giving up. Wow, why does it break your spirit? It intensifies my spirit. To know we're up against pure evil and we're turning the tide and we're winning. And then to know that if we don't fight hard, they're going to win and commit humanity to a nightmare of evil. You think stuff's bad now? You ain't seen nothing yet. Thank me for fighting for my own future and yours collectively. There's not even a question of fighting these people. Look at them. They've got to be opposed. People tend to think being persecuted is, oh, you want to stay away from that. Oh, so you want to stay away from the fight. No, it's like John Paul Jones said when he got commissioned as the head of the U.S. Navy, right when he was starting, and he was writing to the Continental Congress, he said, I only want the fastest ships. I only want to be sent into the main war zones in direct action. They said, here, here's our fastest ship. Go out. He immediately goes out and engages and takes over all these British ships 2-3 times the size, just ramming straight into them. Well, that's what I want to do. I only want the fastest ships. I want to go directly into action. I want to go 24 hours a day. I want reporters all over the country. I want to be 50 times stronger against the enemy. I want 50 times the audience. I want victory. You think what we've done to the enemy has been effective so far? It's nothing. I have not yet begun to fight. So support yourself. Support us. Do it. Or be conscious that you didn't fight when the time was right. You hesitated. You took this as another entertainment venue. Just some other show. Just more talk. This ain't talk. This is the targeting coordinates to take down the enemy. This is the Death Star plans. This is Sting, the Goblin Slayer. They hate this blade. This operation is a sword that is plunged politically, culturally, spiritually into the hearts of our enemies over and over and over again. They hate it. It's a standard of their defeat. It's a symbol of their weakness. That's what we're doing here. This is serious business. So I'm coming to you, asking you to continue to commission us in this fight. We've already delivered you more victories against the enemy than any other media operation in the world. And I'm asking you again for all of our collective futures to come to our aid now more and take your fight to the 110% level. Tell the truth. Be accurate. Stand against evil. Have courage. Until it's not even having courage, it's what you are.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
I think it's important to remind everyone that the only reason why we're not yet living in a 15-minute city on 23-hour lockdown, wearing masks, eating bugs, getting a cancerous shot in our body every other week, plugged into a hive mind to slave away to the elite, it's because of us. It's because of us who went on the streets at every opportunity since 2020. It's because of the truckers in Canada, the farmers in Europe. It's because of the so-called conspiracy people who blew the lid off this whole anti-human agenda. It's because we finally said out loud what most of us were thinking, that we're still somewhat free. So before you judge your crazy, racist, misogynist friends, know this. There's nothing in it for us. We take all the heat. We take all the insults. And we deal with the consequences and the censorship and the loss of revenue and the assassination of character so we can make all of us free. And that includes you. So next time you see one of your crazy conspiracy friends, do your future, your family, and yourself a favor and show them some respect.
It's true. And if you didn't fall for it, congratulations. You are one of the few that resisted the most powerful psychological attack humanity has ever faced. Of course, it shouldn't be that hard. It shouldn't be that hard, but you got to know who to trust, and you got to be able to, really, really believe in what you're doing. I've said it a million times, especially when it comes to vaccines, the pressure that is waged against parents. They have a newborn baby and the hospital just looks at you like, oh, so you want your kid to die? Okay. All right. Now we know. Mark that on your sheet. You want your kid to die. And they got lots of stats that they'll throw at you. And they'll, always give you the worst case scenario. Well, you can avoid the shot, but you want to hear what whooping cough sounds like, And if you don't have the information to combat that, if you don't have like actual sustained knowledge of the reality of the vaccine program, it's going to be really hard to stand up against that level of pressure. You've got to have the information. You got to have faith in the information. So much of what the powers that be do is undermining the faith that you can have in people like Alex Jones or, other truth tellers. Just to make you question, just to make you go, better safe. I'll just get the vaccine. I mean, these people are wearing lab coats and, I remember something bad about vaccines, but I don't remember the details exactly. So I'll just go ahead and get it, right? If you don't have that rock solid understanding, be able to stand up and just go, look, the answer is no. End of discussion. Give me my kid. Give me my kid right now. You don't have that, ability to speak out about that, if you don't have the knowledge to back it up, it's really, really hard to avoid some of these traps. I'm going to go out to your phone calls in this final segment. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. If you want to let them know who sent you, get yourself some IRC Moss, get yourself some Shilajit, what do we even have in stock? I've been gone for a week. What new products do we have? I see a stack of coins here. Are these new coins, or should I not even mention these because they haven't been released yet? I don't know. There's something new constantly at thealexjonesstore.com. Methylene Blue, of course, the standard 50% off with that. Oh, yeah, Power Plant and Methyl Drive. We got two new products, Cellular Energy Bundle, 10% off. The Ultimate Methylation Power Combo. I'm telling you, folks, you leave for a week, you come back, you don't even recognize the store because there's always new products. And they're always fantastic. I'd say there's not been one product from the Alex Jones store .com that I have not appreciated and enjoyed and use regularly. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Keep us on the air in the fight and giving you the information you need to resist the psychological operations that are threatening to, frankly, kill us all. And just on that note, that video, the guy saying, thank a conspiracy theorist, show some respect for your tinfoil hat wearing friends. The left has a different lesson they want you to learn. Oh, Trump is live. Trump is live with the head of NATO right now. Let's go to that. Apologies to our callers. I do want to see Trump live with NATO. We'll try to go to your calls here still, but let's watch.
The U.S. has decided to indeed massively supply Ukraine with what is necessary through NATO. Europeans 100% paying for that. And what we have been doing over the last couple of days is talking with countries, and I just mentioned to ones who in a first wave immediately said, we want to chip in. And then you are really talking about big numbers. Take Germany visiting today, they are really talking about big numbers.
I will say that I spoke with Germany, spoke with most of the larger countries. And they are really enthusiastic about this. They want to, and they're willing to go very far. I will tell you, as per your question, how far would I go? They want to go very far. They don't want this to happen. That's why I think from Putin's standpoint, it would really be good. He gets the country's economy is doing very poorly, and he's got to get his economy back. He's got to save his economy. He could save his country in a sense, but the economy can destroy, destroyed a lot of countries over the years. He wants to get that economy back. And, you know, he's got a great country for trading and other things. If they could use the assets instead of war, he's got some tremendous potential. That's what I would say.
How did you deliver this news to Putin?
Say?
How did you tell Putin this is happening?
I speak to him a lot about getting this thing done. And I always hang up and say, well, that was a nice phone call. And then missiles launched into Kiev or some other city. And I said, strange. And after that happens three or four times, you say, the talk doesn't mean anything. My conversations with him are always very pleasant. I say, isn't that a very lovely conversation? And then the missiles go off that night. I go home, I tell the First Lady, you know, I spoke to Vladimir today. We had a wonderful conversation. She said, oh, really? Another city was just hit. So it's like, look, he's... I don't want to say he's an assassin, but he's a tough guy. It's been proven over the years. He's fooled a lot of people. He fooled Bush. He fooled a lot of people. He fooled Clinton, Bush, Obama, Biden. He didn't fool me. But what I do say is that at a certain point, you know, ultimately talk doesn't talk. It's got to be action. It's got to be results. And I hope he does it. It's potentially such a great country to be wasting so many people on this and the money. And look at what's happened to his economy. Look at what's happened. So,
and with the threat in 50 days,
yeah,
the economy will be hit very hard.
I mean, look, I hope he's going to do it. He knows the deal. He knows what a fair deal is. If there is such a thing as a fair deal, there's no winners here. This is a loser. This is a loser. And I dealt with him from the beginning, and it wouldn't have happened, but I will say Ukraine was the apple of his eye. We talk about it. It was the apple of his eye, but it wasn't going to happen. And he understood that. It wasn't going to happen. And then I noticed, after I was out, I noticed soldiers forming at the border.
Yep.
And then I heard horrible, stupid things being said from the other side. And I said, they're really... handling it very, very wrong. It's a shame. Yeah.
Can I say one thing? And that is about President Trump, because you came to office in January. On the 12th of February, you had your first phone call with Putin. I think you did exactly what I hoped you would do. That is breaking the deadlock, starting the conversation, because you have to test him. I know Putin very well from the days when I was Prime Minister in the Netherlands. You have to test him. And you did this, and you really gave him a chance to be serious, to get to the table, to start negotiations. Steve Witkoff, Marco Rubio, we all tried to help you. But you've now come to a point where you say, well, hey...
We actually thought we had probably four times a deal.
Yeah.
I mean, you were called and you said, this looks good.
Yeah.
And then the deal wouldn't happen because bombs would be thrown out that night and you'd say, we're not making any deals. It was like...
But you breaking the deadlock was crucial because you had to start that process. And you were the only one who was able to do that.
I think we'll get it done.
Do you think he's reasonable enough to...
So, this is
I think we're going to get it done.
The chairman of the Secretary General of NATO, Mark Rutte, former PM of the Netherlands. Clearly, Trump is just fully in favor of the Ukraine war now. Again, this is such a bizarre shift for Trump, who seemed like he was, you know, on the cusp of making a peace deal before he was even in office. And yet it's been six, almost 7 months at this point, and we are seemingly farther away from peace altogether. Might that be because Russia is in fact winning? I mean, this is war. You can have all the nice conversations you want on the phone, but if Putin doesn't have a reason to stop waging the war, he's not going to stop waging the war. And why would he? Basically, Trump is asking the guy who has the advantage and is winning the war, hey, stop winning the war for a little bit, you know, and we'll get peace. It's like, no, Russia has no incentive to stop waging this war whatsoever because they're winning and because it's bankrupting us, because we're having to like stop shipping things to Ukraine because we're depleting our own stockpiles. And clearly NATO is still very interested in going to direct war with Russia. Again, the saber rattling that's gone on in the last week or so is very, very troubling to me. Trump has used some executive expediency to, you know, ship offensive weapons to Ukraine. That's going to just escalate the situation there. You've got, you know, doubling down, saying if Taiwan is attacked by China, we're going to nuke Beijing, essentially, was the insinuation to that threat. And you've got assassination attempts against Iran and Israel talking about building a concentration camp to expel all the Gazans. It's just like everything is ramping up. Everything is heating up. And Trump seems to be at the center of it and encouraging all of it and perpetuating all of it. And you've got UK and others talking about going to, you know, getting on direct war footing with Moscow. And, you know, for the last year or so, every country in Europe has been telling its people, hey, get ready for war. And, you know, we might have to institute a draft and make sure you've got 72 hours of food prepared. The worst comes to worst. So, I mean, they're still trying to, you know, expand this into a wider continent, wide war. And it's just stupid. It's just stupidity. And of course, Lindsey Graham is enjoying it quite a bit. But I want to go to clip number 29 here. After all, he's meeting with Root, the NATO alliance, and the NATO alliance, as far as I'm concerned, like kind of doesn't actually exist. It's just America. It's just America. And we sort of like get the Europeans to co-sign whatever we're doing, but they don't actually have armies or armaments. Like they don't provide the money for NATO to be sufficient and, you know, operate as their collective military. They also don't have their own individual national militaries. I mean, France and England are the only countries with nukes there, and they got nothing compared to what the rest of us have, U.S. and Russia. They just have nothing. Here's the U.K. military, who, again, is saber-rattling and acting like they're about to go to direct war with Russia, which is absurd. And I do think Russia is running into trouble and, you know, behaving in a way that is very objectionable. One of the things they're doing is they're actually filling the jobs that are empty now because of the, you know, people have been conscripted to go to war. So you got a Russian guy, he gets conscripted, sent to Ukraine. Now they're bringing in 1 million Indians to fill those jobs. They're literally sending their own people to die in Ukraine and then replacing them with Indians, which is pretty horrific. Not a great, patriotic insist. I mean, why not just hire the Indians and send them to Ukraine? It would make more sense. It's crazy that any of this is happening. But it is all insane. And Europe acting like they're going to get in war with Russia is just delusional. Here's the UK talking about their military capabilities right now.
Spending. And Britain, as the Secretary of State said, we've got roughly 1,000 troops in Estonia. What kind of numbers can Britain deploy in 2025 as part of an imaginary NATO coalition? What can we actually deploy? And we've mentioned 1,000 troops so far. We've got that. What else can we deploy?
So would you like to have a conversation about the coalition of the willing work?
No, just the question, question I'm asking you.
Okay, so I think as the Secretary of State has said, I don't think it's appropriate that I talk about the detail of numbers. But as part of the wider NATO plans, what has been asked of us in the NATO force model, we're delivering against the commitments that we need to at the appropriate scales over the next couple of years. We'd be the first to say we, of course, would be ready to fight, but we'd also say and acknowledge that there are risks in our ability to do that.
And of course, that doesn't even mention the fact that your homeland is now filled with hostile foreigners just waiting to overthrow your native population. So, yeah, bit of an issue there. Bit of an issue. I think they have like 100 tanks. I think they said they had 100 tanks. So, 1,000 people, 100 tanks. That'll take on the Russian military, right? It's just absurd. We're going to go out to your phone calls now. I've just delivered this. I saw this on X. Former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett denies conspiracy theories linking Jeffrey Epstein to Mossad. Oh, okay, so a case settled then, I guess. Oh, gee, if the, I mean, perpetually honest Prime Minister of Israel says it. I guess it has to be true. Because, you know, if Epstein did work with Mossad, obviously he would come out and say that, right? Obviously. The Prime Minister of Israel, I mean, we all expected him to come out and say, yeah, that was us. Epstein and Mossad and Israel, our country, was running a giant blackmail ring entrapping all of your most powerful politicians into having sex with children and getting it on tape so we could bend them to our will. Obviously, he's going to admit that if that's true, right? Literally less than worthless. Yeah, and by the way, that's the other former prime ministers about Epstein. I'm sure you'll get honest answers there too, right? You, Barack, met with Jeffrey Epstein dozens of times. Of course, after he was convicted, by the way. Lived in his house for a while. Crazy conspiracy theories. Epstein's conduct, both the criminal and the merely despicable, has nothing whatsoever to do with the Mossad or the state of Israel. I'm sure. Totally. No, we're just imagining that. Why even say this? Why even come out and say this? Nobody believes you. Nobody believes you. So you just don't. I just wouldn't even. What? Okay. Amazing. Instead of issuing threats on social media, why don't you sit down for a rational interview on Jeffrey Epstein's ties to the Israeli government? The former TV personality taunted, "We'll reach out to your office this morning." That's hilarious. So, I guess who was that? That sounds like it must have been Tucker. Yeah, Carlson. Carlson hit back at Bennett on X saying, instead of issuing threats on social media, why don't you sit down for a rational interview on Epstein's ties to the Israeli government? Yeah, do that. Do that, Mr. Bennett. Prime Minister, former Prime Minister of Israel, if this is such an absurd conspiracy theory, you sit down with Tucker Carlson and explain how absurd all of this is. It's like, do they really think we're that stupid? I mean, that can't be it, is it? Epstein never worked for the Mossad. The accusation is a lie being peddled by prominent online personalities such as Tucker Carlson pretending to know things that they don't. I mean, we can just, I don't even like feel the need to respond to this because it's just, what's the old claim? Assertions without evidence can be dismissed without evidence. He says that he didn't work for him. Well, I say he did. So there you go. You have more motive to lie than I do. Man, it's just anti-Semitism. It's all this anti-Semitism that's causing all of this. It's not the facts. It's not the reality. It's not the condition that we actually find ourselves in of having Mossad just, you know, run blackmail rings and get away with anything in this country. It's not like they got caught putting Stingray spy devices outside the White House in 2017 and nothing happened to them. It's not like we are under constant reminders, like we're just experiencing over and over again the power that Israel has to warp America to its will. It's not like we just bombed Iran for no freaking reason because Israel wanted us to. They didn't even provide an excuse that time. They were just like, Israel wants us to bomb Iran, so that's what we're doing. And we're just going to ignore all of that, claim all that's anti-Semitism, claim it's absurd that Mossad is working, or that Jeffrey Epstein was working for Mossad, and that they would definitely tell us if he was. Just, they're panicking. I mean, the good news about this is they're panicking. You know, I mean, the Prime Minister, a former Prime Minister of Israel, doesn't acknowledge something like this and make a statement like this if they don't think it's absolutely necessary out of sheer panic because the despicable and mafia-like control that Israel and the Jewish lobby has on American politics is becoming an existential issue for the chosen people. So they're scared. They're scared that the truth is coming out. It's a great meme I saw yesterday. It was a quote from somebody, but it's pretty simple. It's Kant, Immanuel Kant. If the truth shall kill them, let them die. That's how I feel about Israel. If the truth about their activity causes everybody to hate them, then they should be hated, and you should hate them. If the love and support they enjoy is dependent entirely on a giant facade of lies, then tear down the facade and destroy them. Now to your calls. Now, Darla in San Diego, go ahead. You're on the air, line two.
Hi. My thought about the pardon situation, what if it's a money-making idea? What if you're paying a fee so that they'll accept your application, maybe $1,500 or something, and then maybe on a monthly basis you have to pay a fee to have them keep calling and trying to get your person out of prison or jail? I mean, he pardoned 2,500 people on January 17th.
It could be a lot of money.
Another way. Yeah. They could be using this to fill their pockets, because I don't know. What do you think of that?
I think that's absolutely what they could be doing. I mean, that would not be unprecedented. I mean, selling pardons would be a very lucrative business for somebody with the power to do it. And look, it's like, at least then there would be a reason for them doing it, right? At least if it was like, well, we were making lots of money. It's like, okay, you were selling pardons. That makes sense. Otherwise, what's the excuse of letting out thousands of criminals onto the street? It's almost like, I hope they're getting paid, because then at least they would have a reason other than just the wanton destruction of America, other than just wanting violent criminals to be out on the streets and pardoning them to put them in your neighborhood. Like, I hope they're getting paid for that. Otherwise, it's just out of pure spite. Otherwise, just a pure act of spite and, you know, destruction. But I hope they were getting paid. Otherwise, they're just, you know, at least then they'd be greedy and evil, not just evil. At least there'd be some reason for their evil. I don't know if that helps, but, it's certainly a good thought. Thank you for that, darling. Thank you for holding. Let's go to, Christopher in Tyler, Texas, I guess. Christopher, thank you for holding and you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. How's it going this morning, my fellow Houstonian brother?
It's going quite well. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, yes. I have a new theory on the whole Jeffrey Epstein kick. I think he's an alien.
No.
I think that's what, you know, it's almost like the Bush funeral when he handed out the notes at the very end and everybody was like, had that shocked look on their face. It was like a letter went out. And we got to tuck it away like the UFO stuff. You know, we got to keep this. And, you know, and obviously his island would be the UFO station where he would go and take off and, you know, have his interdimensional fun, so to speak.
You should be an advisor to the Israeli prime minister, I think. I think that's a more believable story than what I just read from Prime Minister Naftali. You know, they should just, Bennett or whatever his name is. Yeah, they should, you know, not only does he not work for Mossad, he is a space alien with green skin wearing a mask. That very believable stuff about Jeffrey Epstein. Thank you for the call, Christopher. We're running out of time here, coming to the end of the show. I'm very glad to be back. I do encourage everybody, please go to the AlexJonesStore.com/Harrison to show your support. We're going to be covering weather manipulation. We're going to be covering the violence from the left, which deserves to be a major topic on every right-winger's platform, even more so than Epstein. So we'll get into that later this week. We have a lot still to cover. Stay with us. Stay tuned. The Alex Jones Show begins at 90 seconds, and we'll see you here tomorrow for the American Journal.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease, and what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brain stem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule. It should have two hydrogens on it. And like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1. It's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue, and this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning, next-level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here, look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm going to eat at 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food, stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.